Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Galactic History Show for this week. I'm your host, Chris Hales. Welcome. To all those in the chat room, to all those listening to this live, to all those listening to the podcast. We're going to have a potpourri this afternoon. In the course of the Return to Atlantis show, there has been a number of conversations that we've had in the background, and very enjoyable conversations. I recorded some of them. I'm going to replay some of them today, and one particularly important one next week. And it's the one next week relates directly to the attacks that Andrew was speaking of in the last show. One of the unfortunate aspects of this is that the love and light aspect of the New Age is not all love and light. There's actually some serious things that crop up from time to time. That was one of them. And it's going to be one of probably a couple of interviews that we'll do describing in a bit of detail exactly what happened in the course of that situation. It was apparently directly intended to prevent Andrew from presenting. And if you've heard me and myself and Hope Girl speak of the presentation that the three of us did, the second last presentation for the conference on Sunday afternoon, you'll understand why. It's something that the system would not want to happen. So that's for next week's show. For this week's show, we're going to start off with an audio file which was recorded the day before the conference started. There's Andrew, Shane Chapin, and myself. Shane is actually the software architect for Hope Girls Fix the World website. He's been doing a tremendous amount of really good work, and it was a pleasure to have him around. In fact, I just dropped him to the airport this morning. He and I were two of the three people that are left here at the moment. The last one is myself and my friend Alan Fry from Melbourne, who's hanging out for a few more days, and it's nice to have the company here. Been in constant contact with folk who are here at the conference and since gone. Somewhat of a fuse lit by the presentation that we did and the ideas we put out. They're developing rapidly. People are appearing to assist. Things are falling into place. And in the repurposing show next week, you will begin to hear how it's evolving. And how human energy is stepping up to actually fulfill the role that we intended, which is to co-create our way to a new world. Looking forward to that. But this first little piece is in fact, I was just testing the recorder that I'd purchased. I purchased a little handheld recorder, which is a great piece of equipment, and it was actually quite pivotal in capturing a couple of very useful conversations, one of which I'll play right now. This one was really, I was just testing the recorder, but it was such a nice little piece, I thought I would actually play it for you. And I've simply titled this, it was a sort of a discussion of happiness.
And so the creative process
regenerates you.
It does. It definitely does. But then element and the corresponding, or this goes wrong for a lot of the frustration and a lot of the work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or do I just let it all go to move on to the next? You know, what is next? And
what's making you happy right now?
That's a tough question for me to answer.
Mm-hmm. And that's the soul searching that we all have to do of what makes us happy. Doing galactic history makes me happy. Doing readings for people makes me happy. Doing healings for people makes me happy. Being me makes me happy. Having to have conversations like this with normal people that are advanced enough to begin to comprehend some of the information I'm bringing. Like, Chris never had a clue who I was until 10 minutes before a show I did with him. And the first 20 minutes was, wow, 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 what? Wow, 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 what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Followed up by, okay, this guy's not bullshitting. He's got something to dig into. And then he just dug in and dug in and dug in and didn't back down. Okay, for you, you're in a situation that your life path, what really gives you happiness is interaction with people that are creative. Okay, your education is how you interact with them on a business level, but on a personal level, you can be hyperly creative with people and have no business relation. Building a house, whatever, you know, putting pavers down, you can still do that. For you individually, at this moment, the heart space that you're holding for your business and the heart space that you're holding for your spiritual development, just off from center a little bit. Not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One's going in this way, one's going this way. And they both make you happy, but the heart's still in the center that has to go like this between the two. It's where we choose to open up our crown chakra to the fullest extent of our highest being and allow that creational process and co-creational process with our high vibration being and our egos and everything in between to be fully present about what's making you happy. So when you fall back into the programs that we run in the morning while our I Am Presence is away doing something else, that is in the foundations of the program. And that the different parts of the physical body, the energy body, the sexual body, the sensual body, all those different bodies that we have can act at the same definitions. Because there are times that the different bodies, and then you have other people are complete introverts until you put them in a situation where they talk about something they love and all of a sudden they just talk nonstop. I call it adjusting the rudder of the boat of your direction. Okay? You're on a big ocean of awareness. If you're going towards some type of awareness, you have to be aware of what that awareness is. Let's say, you know, Hope's in there getting the stuff ready and unpacking over there. We don't need to be aware of that. There's people over there. There's people over there. For us, this little reality bubble is what exists here, unless you allow your awareness beyond it. Ceremonial life means you're taking your awareness away from everything, including the work, what makes you happy, all of that, and being in that moment to determine happiness as well as charting your future course through happiness. And then honoring that with some type of ritual, burning of sage, offering of something to the land. So you remember that these trees, this bamboo, all a part of us too, these shells that we sit on, everything, the air, the earth, and giving that the same awareness, honoring it for its sharing of experience in this reality. That's what ceremony and ritual life is.
Coming to understand that my habits in the garden actually encompass that.
Yep.
That's why I like it so much. You walk around and you appreciate absolutely everything that you're working with, you know. The grass, the little insects, the air, just everything.
Mm-hmm. So finding a hobby that's separate of your work that also bring happiness, I recommend that to everyone.
Yeah, I used to have that nice, gardening was it for me.
RC planes, something else. I mean, something where you just go out and be a kid again, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
You can just...
Yeah, it's a playful thing as well.
Yeah.
You know?
You got to have that in your life.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's one of the things I like about the Kung Fu, because it's so physical.
Yep.
It's fun. I like... I got bike
riding. Not only is it fun and physical, you're really learning something about your body.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. That's a really multi... It's one of the... Mm-hmm. Best things I ever did taking that up, because mm-hmm. the levels, there's just no end to the levels, because the energetics, the really high end energetics are in it as well. Mm-hmm. If you can reach them, mm-hmm. so it's yeah.
So what kind
I actually had a very strong debate with myself. I really, really wanted to go up to the martial arts shop in Tampa and buy myself a stick I could play with this weekend, but I know it'd just be a distraction for the things I do. You know, that's what I want to do. I was sitting here thinking about it 2 minutes ago. Just saying, because I like to do it. It's a complete break from reality for me. So
what hobbies do you have? Inner child hobbies. I'll be a little more specific. Because one of my dad's hobbies is cutting grass, and that's not a real hobby.
I tell you, the ultimate indulgence that I have is actually splitting wood.
Okay.
I used to use it as a stress outlet when I was, teens, and I could split wood all day. It's a totally zen thing. What you actually do is you line up a log. And then you actually, this is totally intention, completely, it's a complete manifestation. You actually decide exactly what it's going to look like when you part it.
Mm-hmm.
And just let it happen.
Mm-hmm. And follow through with that creation.
Mm.
Again, it's manifesting.
And you do it as effortlessly as possible. Because if you know how to swing an axe properly, there's very little, there's no real, it's all a matter of, it's like riding a whip, it's like whipping. You know, there's a rhythm to it, and once you're in the rhythm, you don't actually expend that much energy, which is why you can do it all day. If you just kind of pick it up and you do it completely with muscle, you can do it for a few hours or till you damage something, but if you do it the right way, it's like a good golfer can play golf endlessly.
Mm-hmm.
No effort at all, because it's all about the rhythm of the movement, you know, the timing of it all. So the only hassle I ran into was I changed axes a while back, and the new one had a much longer handle. And that caused me some grief, and I actually damaged a tendon in my elbow because it was putting a lot more leverage back on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to use the same amount of force before I got used to the new axe. And
Chris, look at me like this again. Your face in this moment is exactly like my grandfather's.
Really?
I promise you. Not saying that you're him, obviously. You guys were alive at the same time, but it was just... When you looked, I mean, the way the shadow and everything.
Is that English or German in your character?
Yeah, German.
Yeah, I have both on both sides, actually, as well as a bit of Scandinavian somewhere in there. But
cool.
it'll be the German and the English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could, for instance, if I saw you in the street, and you had a Cockney accent, it would be just as fine as the accent you've got. Because you do look like people I've met from England who have Cockney accents. So.
Right.
Mm.
So what hobbies do you have?
You know, and that's over the last few years. All right, so when, and I'm not trying to get all emotional or going into, when my ex and I split up 5.5 years, I made some decisions. I went to the University of Illinois Master Gardener program, and I got really passionate about food and education about food and genetic modification, transgenic materials, and I loved presenting that information, the process of genetic manipulation, and at some point it turned into a burden.
Mm-hmm.
It turned into something that I despised because... Go ahead.
Because you had taken that and didn't fully process the relationship. And
about me and my girlfriend?
When people go from girlfriends to deep into a subject they're passionate about, it's because they're hurt. And there's some part of the hurt that wasn't resolved, and thus it turned toxic on the ability to share that information. I see that all the time.
Well, I think it was about the same time where... Yeah, I would say that I agree with the statement that you made about not fully
processing the breakup and all the energies behind the breakup. What's still in your heart, and then all of a sudden putting something you're very passionate into your heart about, and then just burying some of the pain deeper and deeper.
Oh yeah, I agree that there's probably it's been a nice healing process. I haven't really dated since then.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been focused on my work. But yeah, I've kind of lost.
Okay, that was all for that recording. You can see we're having a very relaxed time. Myself, Hope Girl, Shane Chapin, and Andrew had a small flat about three streets from the hotel. It was a bit of a retreat to go to, which was the scene of most evenings' discussions. There was always some sort of discussion going on outside in the warm night air. Very nice warm nights, not too many mosquitoes or insects. Altogether pleasant, and indeed we had some very constructive arguments. And the next one, the next piece I want to play for you was a discussion that relates directly to the presentation given by Lisa Renee, where she was talking a lot about system architecture and, you know, how it works and how it was inserted and what you can do to actually free yourself of system architecture to a degree. Well, this is some of Andrew's take on system architecture. There's an initial file and a second file. The second file is still uploading, and I'm crossing my fingers by the time the first one is done, which is about a half an hour's worth, that the next one will be uploaded, because it is an extremely interesting piece of information, quite vital actually. So this is a piece, it runs for about 30 minutes, and it's sort of part one of system architecture. So I'll put that on now and see you on the other side.
Okay.
Just want to preface this. There's a number of conversations we had that Andrew began by saying, "Chris, I think you better get the recorder." This was one of them.
Let's just do a recap. Okay. It's Chris Hales here, having a conversation in a very pleasant backyard on a very pleasant day with Andrew Bartzis and Shane Chapin and myself, and it's become so interesting we've decided to record it.
Correct.
And the question I asked, we're having a discussion about the control mechanism and some of the physics as to how it actually works, and Andrew started to kind of get a very interesting line of information as the answer, so we decided to record it.
That's
right. So we were talking about how the implants that the system uses are actually controlled.
Correct. It starts with the architecture of the implants. It started with Project Talent in the 1940s and 50s, which is an amalgamation of all the rape, torture, physical abuse, mental abuse programs that were done in the Knights, the eras of the Knights. Sexual abuse has been in our society for a long time as part of the program architecture. When they needed to upgrade the system so it could affect people on a much heavier scale, they needed to create a system that was an omnidirectional field that could affect everyone. So they created the initial architecture programming field, which is based off of the crystalline mountains from Pine Gap to all wherever there's a crystal chunk in a mountain, it's a resonator to create this field. Our world is made of energy, and in between atoms there's an infinite amount of space, and in that infinite amount of space you can have things that phase in and out of a reality that we believe in. This believed reality has a measurable sentience vibration to it. And an implant can be put into you, and you'd never know it because it phases out from one reality into this physical reality. Like this table that I'm touching is physical, but it's still energy. We just don't perceive it as its energy. So if an implant were to come in back into your medulla or into your cerebrum or into your tailbone, it would be able to institute programs on an architecture layer as the fundamental blueprints of who you are. They can remap your genetic sequence. They can change your ancestral ship so that you have a different soul relations, and you'd never really realize that they could change that much. And as they begin to work on those very fundamental and subtle layers that we're unaware of because we have amnesia as a species, and when we come through the birth canal, we're unaware of truly who we are. And this technology is fully aware of who we are, and what we can do. And it is being used as a dog collar in some scenarios, and shock collar as another scenario, or a complete and total programming mechanism from you, from the top down, bottom up, from the point that you're born. And the architecture is an omnidirectional field that phases in and out of reality. And you could have an implant in you at one moment, and the next moment it's gone, but the program's inside you. And that's what the founding of Project Talent was to mass insert the very founding Orion and Sirian Gray hybrid dark technologies, which were meant to be domination and control chipping technology.
That was for Project Talent, prior to MK Ultra.
Project Talent's been around since the World War I.
Yes.
And it came out of Project Southern Cross, which was a Nikola Tesla overview of the Tesla death ray weapons and mm-hmm. looking at Archimedes weapons and a number of other stuff. But they discovered with Tesla's experiments that energy is free and you can do it anywhere. They also figured out how to make crystalline implants that had no moving parts inside them. They just literally had a single program, and that mm-hmm. program was to be warrior,
mm-hmm.
to be healer, to be
okay.
scientist, to be this. And they could look and scan the whole world of all the beings living on it and find the genetic sequence in an individual line that said that somebody's going to come into this lineage and it's going to be a powerful soul. And they began what's called predictive modeling. And Project Talent was to put the predictive modeling inside everyone that they could that was in any place that had power, like Mount Shasta, Mount Fuji, the Bermuda Triangle. They wanted to see how souls would come in and begin predictive modeling, because it was all about what was going to happen between 2011 and 2014. Mm-hmm. So needed to build these predictive models by inserting this technology and begin the process of domination and control, so they could fine-tune their propaganda mm-hmm. and then fine-tune their timeline viewing to look for specific lineages that they had already targeted in the 1900s, from 1900 to 1917. The Spanish influenza was actually released to actually kill a specific portion of people that had a genetic sequence in them that they couldn't
control.
The implants wouldn't stay embedded in them, and mm-hmm. the programs wouldn't stay embedded in them.
How successful were the implants? Would they always work?
Torturously successful.
Were they?
Yeah.
So would they give more or less complete control of the individual, or just control of that aspect of the individual that they wanted?
The individual gave them control. That's right. What it was. That's the torture and abuse until mm-hmm. you break a person into three or four or five personalities. Dave Corso is a survivor.
So would they do that and implant them?
Yes.
Yep.
That's Project Talent.
What if they were tortured and abused,
and then they'd stick implants in you.
If they just implant you, that's not enough? They've got to break you?
In the Project Talent, it wasn't enough. The technology wasn't refined enough, and the predictive modelings weren't strong enough. Dave Corso, he's a survivor of Project Talent, and I've worked with him many, many times. And the types of technology that he has in him is even more advanced than what they have today, but it was too much, and they broke him into like 700 different personalities. Mm-hmm. And then split his body into a few thousand different clones, and then timeline traveled him around all over, and then put him in different dimensions and different universes. And they needed to see and predictive model what their control systems would do if they made him a sleeper agent on another world.
I mean, that's the plot of a whole series of movies. Well, just there, right there in that paragraph.
The whole thing is, remember, Earth is connected to the dreaming minds of millions and millions of other planets. So if you give a person a belief structure that they go in, just like the Mars program is, if you give people a metal box with alien writing and say it's a jump room, they'll believe it and make it work.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with implants. They're trying to get us to make a belief system so that they use the conduits of Earth, which is the dreaming mind of Earth, which means you can mentally teleport yourself to the dreaming mind of another world and then solidify yourself there in a skin suit that's the same as another world.
Mm.
So you can create massive amounts of sleeper agents on other worlds. And that's why this world is in quarantine, because they know that it'll spread viral.
So it's all about belief in the end. Now,
belief and sentience.
We actually had a conversation last night about the jump rooms. I just wanted to touch on that for a minute, because most people have been fascinated by the stories that came from Andrew Bishago,
mm-hmm.
Laura Eisenhower, a couple of other people have come forward about traveling to Mars in a jump room.
Correct.
And you've revealed that it's just a box. And the only reason it worked was because the people who stepped into it believed that it would take them to Mars. So it did.
Correct.
Or it took them to some sort of version of Mars that they believed they'd end up on. Now, did they actually end up on the physical planet, or was it a construct?
It was an extended fake experience mm-hmm. that created a belief structure that empowered a box.
The ultimate TARDIS.
Exactly.
So and Doctor Who's box is just a matter of his own personal belief, that police box.
In one extent, yes. And then there was the discovery of technology that allowed you to bilocate and remote experience, which made belief systems even more potent.
Yeah.
So
it would expand what you believed was possible.
Correct.
And that's all that's required. See, we're actually imprisoned by limited belief for the most part in this aspect of the system, but in the functionaries of the control system, their actual operatives, the MKUltra dudes, they empower them with a wider range of specific beliefs that still serve the system, but are way beyond what the population believes is possible.
Correct.
Fascinating. Jump in with any sort of questions you have, Shane.
I'm listening right now, and thoughts are brewing. I will.
Sure.
Something else, when it comes to the Mars and the Jump Room programs, in our history, there was technology that did it. And that's the power of myth that's being used to create belief systems now. And that's what's attempting to be done now between 2011 and 2014, is to use the power of myth from the ancient times so that when people go to create beyond now, they use those myths as a foundational creation,
mm-hmm.
when in fact they're lies.
Mm.
And some were literally created to just be propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Well, propaganda is a matter of establishing belief sets.
Correct.
That's all it's for.
Correct. And on top of that, when you look at the Mars Jump Room, their purpose was to create a group of people that could use belief system to go invade another world and create a belief system within that world so that they could hijack that reality, like their reality is hijacked.
And that's the terms that they think in when they're planning what they want to do next. How will we shift the belief
system?
The
Shagio didn't know what was happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
William Stillians didn't know what they had. They were in the belief that they were going there to research
Mars.
Real.
They had a real experience to them.
They were there
a physical experience
as members of the military and scientists and explorers to go look at Mars.
Mm.
They weren't there for nefarious purpose. The people that were creating the experiment did that.
They all appeared to have handlers, people with them who were from higher up in the system, if you like.
Time travelers.
Well, they knew what was going on. They were just walking these people through a new set of beliefs.
And
they were
time travelers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to put that in there. Example in Bishagio, when he said he went back as a kid to see Lincoln.
Yes.
That really happened. When you expose children to timeline travel and to timeline technology, you alter their belief system on such a grand scale, they can do things that the controllers never expected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Bishagio, Stillings, and all those other guys are able to stay alive now. Because they did things in the time stream that made it very difficult for them to be eliminated, because so much of what they did was the foundation for timeline sight and selection of all the presidents since then.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that Obama, there's a story that Bishagio talks about meeting a very young Obama. Now, they're obviously grooming Obama from probably since the time he was born, if you could track back his
history. Before he was born.
Before he was targeting
his soul in the astral world. They had it in what's called a cold storage in Saturn, and then Saturn took it out of cold storage and inserted it into the astral matrix.
There's an apparent aspect of Obama that appears to be not, and this has come out of a conversation that Shane and I were having earlier, where Obama actually appears to be, if you like, resisting some of the things that he's being required to do. You know, he seems to not be cooperating in terms of attacking Iran and Syria, for instance. Now, is this simply part of their plan to make us feel like that there's actually hope for us, that someone, at that position in the system is actually acting for us in some way, or is that just part of their trick?
Let's break the question down, the question and the statement down. Anything that's public consumption propaganda is a trick.
Everything.
Everything.
Okay.
There are times that the tricks have to have some level of truth behind it to be believed, because our hearts and our minds can determine what's crap and what's not. So if you're going to create something that's total propaganda, it can't all be lies. It has to have some layer of truth.
It has to have an anchor in it to actually sell the lies.
But that truth could be so distorted by disinformation that no one will ever know. I mean, the disinformation campaign beyond what's in the propaganda is really the weight on everyone's shoulders that they can't get off of them.
Yeah. Now, Shane, when we talked before, I was actually putting forth my view that I felt that Obama was in part in control of himself because he appeared to be not doing certain things that I felt the system wanted him to do. Now,
he's powerless. He has no power.
What it reveals is there's a flaw in my logic that I have to assume everything's a trick until proved otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I should not observe events and try and judge whether they're organic or not. I need to start from the position that everything's a trick.
Yep.
So, does that help? I know that may not. It's not a really satisfying answer, is it?
Definitely not a satisfying answer.
No, but it's becoming more and more real because every time I have these conversations with Andrew. The things that I'm grounding my information on either have the rug pulled on them or shifted by your perspective, Andrew, which
mm-hmm.
is why we're going to record some of these conversations over the next few days
mm-hmm.
one-on-one so that we can bring out a whole lot of stuff that's really hard to do on the shows.
In a non-live radio scenario.
Yeah, it's obviously easier for you to deal with the energies of a couple
correct.
Of people here
right.
than the whole audience.
A few hundred thousand that are constantly within the energy field.
Yeah. Because yeah. you're actually interacting with everyone that ever will listen to it, and not just.
Correct.
At the moment, you can confine yourself just the two of us.
Right. Yeah. Neither of us have made an I Am Presence choice to put this in the public
eye. Yep.
And when you go on air, it's instantly in the public eye, instantly within the belief system.
Yep.
And that's the state where I'm at now, where what's gone on for me the last 10 days
mm-hmm.
is. Me making a determination is what type of public figure I am,
mm-hmm.
and my purpose is to be No More Secrets,
mm-hmm.
and if I'm going to do No More Secrets on a big scale, is radio interviews right for me?
Mm-hmm.
Is video right for me? What's right at this point? What's right is telling the truth at every scale, at every level, at every fiber of my being that said, come here and do right with domination control ending.
Yeah, well, see, I know that the trick for you, if I may use the word trick, because it suddenly acquired a whole new meaning for me, is to energetically manage your life so that you can put the information out in a way where you do get out what needs to get out without actually, you know, having to go through hell
mm-hmm.
energetically yourself to do it, because doing the radio shows, etc., is... And the sprinkler system's firing up behind us. Isn't that interesting? The system speaks. Somewhere or another, there's a guy in a control room buried in a mountain in America. Turn the sprinklers on and muck up their recording. Sorry, guys, it's not loud enough.
So they get sprayed.
Going back to the MKUltra and some of the other earlier projects, were these individuals that went through that, were they targeted based on their DNA, their
and soul,
okay.
and mm-hmm. soul lineage, where they'd been, what dimensions they've lived in?
So did they have hardware that was necessary, at least initially, until the advancement of this technology?
There was hardware inserted brain technology as far back as you can remember. The Atlantean Lemurians had crystalline implant technology, which was captured, and then it took a very long time for them to reverse engineer, because the technology that we had in our bodies at that time was to make us even more in tune with Earth, the trees, the air, the gravel, the animals. That was its purpose, is the program architecture of the world interfunctioned with us in a very positive way. And then they figured out how to reverse engineer it into a control and domination system. Again, it comes back to the skin suit technology in your body, that these systems can be put in there because there's architecture framework that says if you put this crystalline implant somewhere around the pineal gland, you'll be able to interfunction with your sentience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what our DNA skin suit did was it took that crystal and put it in the third eye and broke it down to its most basic pieces, and then the third eye pineal gland was amplified and created. And that's what phased it out of reality.
Mm-hmm.
This new technology, they'll literally stick it into your pineal gland, insert programming, and then phase it back out of reality.
Wow. And how do they stick it in there? What's the technique for putting it in?
There's a complete and total XY axis on our world. That's the 40 control rooms that I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to pinpoint where absolutely everyone is in the world now, what DNA structure you have, and make a genetic sequence of who you are, what you are, what soul families you are. Just like I describe where other peoples have lived,
mm-hmm.
they have a very high accuracy rate of who you are, what soul you've been, where you've been, what experiences you've had.
What is what role does somatic germline manipulation play or could play in the future, or is that even necessary to get some of these new upgrades or these new technologies?
What do you mean by somatic germline in a is it a more
To keep it kind of in reality, the ability to determine what color eyes you're going to have, how tall you're going to get, what is your muscle constitution, and that's kind of what it's been sold to the public as. Well, initially it was to extract disease or take out some of these.
That's the propaganda of what geneticists and genetics are doing and how they insert it into our television, our movies. And when it comes down to it, you physically can change your DNA at any moment
Absolutely.
In time.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah.
Through your belief system, through your connection to the earth, or your connection to the ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, epigenetics now, right?
Mm-hmm. Andrew, going back to the subject of implants, what you're indicating is that are they at the stage where they could simultaneously implant everybody on the planet? Could they do that yet?
No. And if they did, they'd lose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I asked about
the
germline manipulation, if you will, the ability to get us on board and be okay with going into the doctor and having our DNA right
there. Or having a cesarean section and that's of a natural birth, or letting
mm-hmm.
your kids
okay.
have vaccinations
mm-hmm.
because
yeah, exactly.
it's your belief system. They want you to believe and walk into it fully.
Because
mm-hmm. if they were to take over everyone, they would lose. Ultimately, because
mm-hmm.
they don't have our consent to
yes.
do all that.
Yes, it's abrogating free will on a
right.
huge scale to do that, yeah.
So
that would cause a reaction across the universe if they did that, I presume. Or would it?
No, it wouldn't, because the other universe would welcome it because it would be their greatest mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that they can't mass implant everyone. They know that. That's totally counter to their purpose. They want us to do it and to take the karmic hit for doing it out of our free will.
Yeah, okay. They want to trick us into asking for it by the correct. Methodology of propagandizing it as a medical benefit, as
correct.
Shane was just saying. So it's another trick.
It's another trick.
Okay, now what I wanted to do now was to... Then this is something we've talked a little bit about one-on-one. There was an incident that happened when I was asleep some years ago, and I don't know if you remember the description of it that I gave. I got woken up. I found myself more or less on my hands and knees with what I can only describe as an energy vortex. I could physically feel a vortex around my abdomen, okay? And it appeared to be accelerating as I awoke. It hit a peak, and what I felt was somewhere between 3 and 5 little explosions up the line of my spine, and then it just stopped. And I basically dropped onto my front and went back to sleep after just a moment. But I...
Were you still on the bed?
I was still on, as far as I can tell, I was on my hands and knees on the bed.
I don't remember you telling me the story, actually.
Okay, I may have told it to somebody else. But it felt like something had been removed, a succession of things up my spine had been removed.
It sounds like your kundalini got evacuated and then basically you took a poop out your crown chakra. There are times where parts of your higher soul will come in and be in a line with your dreaming body as it's coming back into the human frame after an extended situation where you're trying to heal yourself in a regeneration chamber, and then the system's trying to mass dominate you because it's identified you in timeline, in the future timeline, as being somewhat of a threat or somewhat
mm-hmm.
of something that needs to be watched over because your potential is changing so rapidly that they'll go and mass invest a large series of implants in your tailbone, the back of your neck, your feet, anywhere in your energy meridian systems, and they'll be dormant until you go through a sexual arousal stage or a sensual stage or a high energy stage where you're learning, and then they'll be designed by purpose to put you in depression, aggression, or obsession,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll phase out. and then you'll come out of that digression, obsession, and regression, and you'll get happy again and doing what you like, and all of a sudden they'll pop back in and they'll keep you in that manic depressive state.
I was going to say, manic depression, there it is. You know, we try and treat it with drugs that, fluoride-based drugs, and it's just the implants turning on and off.
And what the fluorides do is make it harder for your body to actually dematerialize the program architecture. So there's so much idea about there of what fluoride does. Fluoride is there to aid the transition of implant technology in and out of phase reality.
So it's not for our teeth. I'm shocked.
It's not for your teeth. It's not for covering up your third eye, because they want your third eye active.
Well, that's an interesting point, actually, and that's counter to all of the dogma in the in the alternative alternative media. They want it active because they can control us through it. So that's the trick.
So we initially started recording the conversation.
By the way, both Andrew and Shane are actually rolling cigarettes, in case you're wondering what the
spirits, American spirits,
what the rustling was in the background. It's not the, it's not agents of the system coming through the grass at us. It's
or the sprinklers.
Or the sprinklers turning on. But look, that, you know, it more and more it highlights that everything that we see publicly, and we did touch on this, Shane, before in the conversation too, is that the parts of the system we see publicly are not what's going on. The real stuff's going on in the background, and we just have to extend that to all the information that we receive from anywhere.
And that's where I'm at in my story is the Akashic record is unlimited. The only thing that hinders me is physical time to be in the energy field to do it and maintaining my life.
Well,
we've
got 3 days after the conference, so let's just keep recording these conversations for 3 days.
What role is harp playing in all of this? That's initially what we started to talk about.
Harp is a very wide range spectrum program. It's not just for weather control. Weather is our sentience in the macro form as unity consciousness that hasn't gone through the full conscious change. So our weather patterns of our earth are the macro reflections of us going through the process of becoming in unity consciousness. So what HARP does is changes the weather pattern, so we are in more turning up the junk stage where we can't go inside ourselves. And then there are other people that are affected by the weather differently because they remember a time in their soul life where they were connected to the earth and connected to the ground and connected to the winds and the four elements and the nature and the dragonfly spirits and the, all of that. And now HARP keeps us away from reverse engineering unity consciousness in disunity.
And the chemtrails are part of the mechanism of HARP.
And more. They're more there to blur the sky because there's a transparent layer with dots on it that make the sky look very different. The stars look very different. And our belief system, our beliefs are so strong that Gemini is this, the Big Dipper is over there. We've had how many millions of years of the precession of the equinox, which was created so that we have a belief structure that's encoded
that means
into
that
it.
Astrology is part of the control mechanism.
Absolutely.
Control
I've said that many times.
Yeah, okay.
But it has to have good in it for people to believe in it.
Yeah.
Just like the Bible, it has to have good in it. See, they don't care about the good in it. I honestly don't. They just want the propaganda because it was never about the in-between time. The in-between time is the hairball. It's the end time, where people's belief systems determine what they create and how many times Earth separates.
Yeah, it becomes when the population become consciously aware of the fact that they're co-creating everything, that's the point where they want to have their propaganda in position, ready to have its effect, which is to make us create the reality that they want.
Correct.
Okay, this is the big, this is the ultimate trick then, to trick the entire collective into creating the reality they want, so they can keep feeding on us energetically.
At a different scale, at a much higher scale.
Yeah, because we'd be tuned to what they want, what they really want.
And more than that, we would be going from like 10 volts to a million amps.
Because of the energetic shift that we're experiencing.
And the belief shift.
Yeah, so this is their end game.
And they wouldn't be tied to the karmic repercussions because it's our free will decision, correct?
Well, exactly. Yeah. All they did was tell us some stuff to shift our beliefs, and we accepted their information as fact and manufactured the
and
the results.
That's what source streams are doing here in this reality right now.
Andrew, as soon as we started having this conversation, my tinnitus kicked in humongously. And it's just a door slamming. Now, what it was actually Hope Girl, who realized we were recording and decided she would actually leave us alone for a little while, I'd say. So,
we started off this conversation talking about the technology of implants, and I don't know if we've mentioned on this recording the aspect of the control system that you were describing at that moment, which was the field that they create, which enables them to, you know, observe us and do things to us, using the space in between the atoms of the planet itself.
Correct. As the omnidirectional field that's contained, our belief systems are contained in.
Mm-hmm.
There's an energy field around Earth that's our belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy field is linked to Earth's energy field. And what they're trying to do with the technology is to separate us from the Earth mind. So they follow their own belief system, so we recreate Earth instead of we create Earth and Earth creates with us. Just take that symbiotic relationship away.
And they want to actually, they want to be directing this, they want to be the traffic cop that makes this relationship work their way.
Correct.
I mean, reclaiming personal sovereignty is absolutely the key to rejecting their propaganda,
mm-hmm.
which is changing the game, which is why we keep getting back to that aspect of the conversation again
and again, like a cracked record.
Because all of these conversations lead back to that point every time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably going to be the theme of these conversations, that we'll start off talking about a technical aspect, a social aspect, some aspect of the propaganda and control, and we'll end up saying, well, how do we fix it?
We can't fix it.
You can only change it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there some point in the future that there will come a point where our technology, our body suits, etc., will not be able to break this mold? It'll be so powerful, and is that what we're...
No, I don't think they'll ever, because it'll only be by our consent, always by our consent. If we change our minds, it'll only take an instant to fix it.
That's right.
Let's not use the word fix, to make something new. Because even though, you know, the message that that we've been trying to put out on the shows is that we really need to create something new, because the old can't be fought, it can't be made better, it can't be made to work, because it was never made to work in our favour.
You have to create your way out of it.
It's the...
on all levels.
Good morning, Hope.
Good morning, Hope.
Morning.
We are recording about implants and all sorts of other reality-based stuff.
I did a good job.
And I suspect we need to probably stop this conversation now and attend to getting some food, because we haven't eaten yet.
Nope.
We're running on coffee. And, well, these guys are running on coffee and cigarettes. I'm just running on coffee and a bit of an apple. So we'll stop the recording now. Ah, yes. Hope's writing me notes now, because she wants to stay in the background here. I'll stop this recording and we will take up this conversation a little bit later in the day.
Sure.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you,
Shane.
Thank you.
Okay, well, that was part one of architecture, and I'm just about to see if part two's uploaded. I've had a little issue with uploading these files. Seem to be working, but I'm going to have to refresh my browser, and there's a slight chance that it'll disconnect. So if everyone just stands by for a minute, if that happens, I'll simply reconnect and we'll do it all over again. But let's see what happens. Okay, now, hopefully everyone can still hear me. It actually is reloading as I'd hoped it would. Could someone in the chat tell me that they're still hearing me? That would be very useful. Someone could just type a yes in the chat. I'll give you guys a chance to log back in. Someone in the chat could just let me know that I'm still putting out a stream, that would be really good. That's interesting. Okay. I'll just write, can you guys still hear me? 1, 2, 3, 4. I guess what I can do is check on the player. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, Chris. Okay. Thank you, Fante. All good. We'll look at architecture part two now. Actually goes for longer than the first part, interestingly enough. And we started out explaining a few more technical details, but I'm going to hit the go button on this. This actually goes for about 45 minutes, which will take us well into the second half. So what I might do for you guys is just give you a quick bathroom break now that we've sorted out the technical details, and we'll continue straight after that. So here's our usual calming theme in reverence from David Tolk. We're back. Just having a slight little chat, which I don't do all that often. It's really only because this is largely a pre-taped show, and just wanted to say, just for the people in the podcast, people who are listening live but not in the chat room, just wanted to say thank you for receiving. Thank you for being the other part of this, because otherwise this would be me talking to myself. We all know what that means. Yes, let's not go there. But still, it's great for me to understand that the work that I'm doing and that all the folk like me are doing is heard and is appreciated. And you're the other half of the equation. So thank you. Having said that, I'm going to jump back into Architecture 2, which is just the name I've given this file. It's the second part of a discussion about architecture. As I said, this goes slightly longer than the first, and we really get down to some nitty-gritty of details. So, enjoy.
Well, we're back again almost immediately because we decided there was a little bit of technical information we needed to put out there about the architecture of the implants and Andrew,
how the programs work.
And we wanted to actually get that down on tape so we don't have to actually go back to it later while it's in fresh in
Andrew's mind. You're asking, you created Visual Basic, and how does that relate into programming? So when they create a program, let's look at the two most basic programs that they want to insert into you at any time. The victim program: I am a victim, I am powerless,
mm-hmm.
I am a victimizer.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a victim? Someone that allows things into their energy field that is greater than their belief system. What is a victimizer? Someone that inserts their beliefs into a person's belief system that they know is incapable or unable to have the free will to stop it. So the program itself is a set of emotional responses that are attached to your adrenal glands to put you in fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
So when your adrenal glands are really high, you'll be aggressive and you'll be a victimizer. If you are in a victim state, your endocrine glands won't properly be producing and you won't have the awareness to stop something to come into your energy field. It's like if you're in a big crowd of people and you start all feeling their energy, it's because your endocrine glands aren't functioning right. Your acetylcholine's not functioning right. And the chemical processes in your skin suit are in such a way that they're scrambled, and it makes it very easy for you to just be a victim. On the other side, a victimizer program, which is literally just manipulating your energy meridians so that you are in a high energy state, aggressive state, and fall into the archetype personality of a dominator. And there are people that are dominators but are humongously good people because they have good hearts behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people that are victimizers that have no heart behind them. And those people accept the programming at their heart level. And when you accept a program at your heart level, because your belief system says that this world is concrete and glass and
mm-hmm.
you eat cows and vegetarians are less than people, that's them in the program. If you look at the Fox News people, they're all Republican Christians, and you look at the MSNBC people, they're Democrat and pro-life, pro-choice. Again, it's looking at the belief system that a culture has and then creating foundational software that manipulates the culture as well as the culture changes, so you can upgrade the victim victimizer software.
Mm-hmm.
And the software itself is created in a dream environment.
So it's actually manipulating at gland level.
Correct.
To actually stimulate really basic responses.
Correct.
to shift your behavior and your response to interacting with the people around you. So
mm-hmm.
you'll tend to be aggressive. They just turn on the right hormones to
Correct.
Make you aggressive.
Correct. And you follow that habit pattern, which is implanted into you in a dream environment.
So they use the dream environment to make further suggestions to you,
which
about
is
how
why,
you should behave.
Which is why they created the sacred geometry cities to trap you in the
dream
room, so that they can make you so you'd be very susceptible to those programs and implants.
We have no idea what a free world would actually feel like to live in.
What is free will?
No, a free world. And a
what
world
is a free world?
Well, a world where there isn't one of these domination systems in play. Does that exist?
Yeah. Not here. Not right now, not at the moment of this recording. No. But it does exist on Earth, in all of us, because we're already there.
Mm-hmm.
Timeline genocide is what created this paradox disunity reality. And until we resolve our paradoxes, which is why we're in disunity, why we're in domination and control, why we must go through every aspect of separation of source at the galactic level, separation of source at the universal level, and separation of source at the planetary level,
mm-hmm.
separate on the source at a human level, even in your local environment.
Mm. Oh, look, I've spoken about division many times now on the radio. It's all by division. Yeah.
And when you divide on all of those levels and all of the scales, it's only the individual I am presence that can make any change.
Mm-hmm.
And when the I am presence is stuck in software programming because we give away our free will to it, you're in a state where people won't do anything. They'll just follow the materialism, consumerism program that's put in front of them.
Mm.
And then you have people that are light workers or grid workers or something else, and they're following their own program. And then there are programs that are created for light workers or for dark workers to make them create factions and divisions, because inside their DNA they're incarnating into these old factions that were created to bring Earth back to its original timeline before timeline genocide. So you have a tremendous amount of things working against our regaining of unity consciousness, because we started as a unity consciousness species, and it was taken away step by step by step by step until the last fall of Atlantis, where there was no unity consciousness species left.
The interesting thing about it is that we can take it back in an instant if we act in unity consciousness. All of the steps they've taken can be instantly
removed
when we reach that.
Just like me dumping out the water out of a cup.
Yep. And that's reality.
That's reality.
So when you talk about the activation of chemical processes that lead to our response mechanism, at what point did they realize that they could do so with food?
When you're overeating carbs, your adrenal gland will recharge faster or burn out faster.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, depending on your genetic makeup and the soul lineage you are, eating certain types of foods will trigger spiritual responses, which will make you high energy, which will make you target in the dreamtime world to be a battery for them to go and drain more. Because that's also part of the architecture, is your energy for them. You're a battery for them. Just like in the Matrix,
mm-hmm.
in the beginning, where he wakes up and there's thousands and thousands of tubes. That's a very accurate, soft disclosure,
mm-hmm.
but not physically. We are energy to them because we're an energy planet, but
mm-hmm.
we have a physical reality. And our energy is based off of our free will to be incarnated into a body. And when we begin to giving away our free will, because we expect to be a symbiotic relationship with the planet, and then they have this facade that is creating the separation of two worlds. So you're not symbiotically related to your planet anymore. You're individually related to yourself. And once you're related only to yourself, you fall into the programs. And programs are wide-ranging, from Democrat program, Republican program, citizenship program, patriot programming, nationalist programming, go on and on and on and on. Criminals, thieves.
I mean, at ground level, if you want to understand, if you want to work out what aspect of the programming you're in, you'd look at your life and what you've become involved in. So if you're involved in a political party, it's the party programming. If you're involved in, say, the military, it's the patriot programming. And there's variations on that,
right.
Right, that obviously there's flavors all over the place. But it's very easy to see if you're in an ism particular,
correct.
Then you're in, you know, one of the things that's been forced upon us,
correct.
To create this construct.
That's right. To create this construct out of using our free will to keep it solid.
Do you remember a TV series called Red Dwarf?
Yep.
Better Than Life game?
Yep.
Wasn't so good.
Nope.
Nope. And we're in one.
And we're in one right now.
Exactly. And somewhere there's a domestically obsessed robot trying to get us out,
mm-hmm.
called Crichton.
There's a movie out there called Existence,
mm-hmm.
Existence, and it's about a person that creates a holographic video game, and it brings a bunch of people into the story, and at the end of the story, they think they come out, but they're not actually out.
Yeah, it's like Inception,
mm-hmm.
multiple layers.
Inception's another great, great way of describing the world we live in right now.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's a way we can tell when we've actually extracted ourselves from the matrix that we're in, other than using a spinning top and seeing whether it ever stops. Now there'll be a point where the people actually do start to take reality back, make it their own again. How will we be able to tell we've actually done
that
job?
You're not going to take reality back. You're going to let it go. Uh-huh. Let's look at our linguistics here for a second. Is taking a program?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How can you take back something that's already you're in the creation of it? Revolution? Is revolution a program?
Absolutely.
All of it?
Yeah. Creation should be the only program that we actually think about. We're creating.
A symbiotic.
See how easily I slip back into the programming.
Me too.
It's there all the time in our language. It's right in, you know, it's right in front of us.
It's so much a part of us at every moment that only the I Am Presence can shut it off.
Mm.
You know, there's this saying of if you're a vibrational match to something, it's there for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's programming.
Mm.
So there are people that have belief systems that say if you're all heart, nothing can harm you. In this world, that's lies. If you're all love, that's your lie.
Mm-hmm.
You'll still starve to death.
Yeah.
Okay.
All we are is
to still be hurt by people that are in the system. You will still be attacked by other people's belief systems, no matter how much of a love being you are. Because you're not in creation.
If I can try and describe our existence, because what's happening over a period of time is I'm kind of absorbing new parts of the information, and it's not just coming from you. It's being reinforced by commentaries from elsewhere. My perspective is currently coming to the conclusion that as energetic entities, we are simply consciousness with a belief set that's creating a physical world that we exist in, and that the game is simply the control of the belief set, because we will always be energy and we will always be consciousness. Yes, the variable is the belief set, and part of the belief set is actually knowing that you have one, and that you're actually going through a current system, which is a set of beliefs that don't come from within.
And once you have beliefs, what happens? Your experience on the world is different.
Yes. Shift your belief set, shift your experience.
We are experiential beings. Mm. We're here for experiences. That's why we incarnate all over the galaxy in the different universes, to come here for an experience.
Let me have a go at a different description then. So if we say we are consciousness and we're not going to take back reality, we're simply going to make a decision to experience something else.
Exactly.
I think that's more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's really simple.
Yep.
Really simple. There's no politics involved. There's no financial system involved. It's one simple decision.
That's right. One simple decision. Well, let's look at the term simple decision. For many, it will not be a simple decision because their belief system is so rigid.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be torturous for them to go through a change.
Absolutely.
And they'll need to be embraced by the old Earth as they go through the change in vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And the rays of vibration, part of the vibration. And then they realize that the vibration is still a belief system.
Yeah, well.
Until you're back into the symbiotic relationship with Earth, you are in still the facade, even if you're transitioning through creation out of the old reality and into the new reality. Yeah, tough one, isn't it?
Have to think about that one. Yeah.
We're always creating our own facades. Even in creating our way out.
Well, to exist in physicality, we have to create a facade. There's an avatar involved and an environment. There's the skin suit and the scene. And then there's the other beings that are interacting in that particular game at that particular time. The metaphor they're using to build what we call computer games in is exactly the same. You know, there's a programmer that sits there and creates a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you engage in the game by agreeing to behave as an avatar in a certain way in this scene. And there's a constructed game, and you know, it's fun, and you can make up your own to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But you can never make up your own completely, because it's a programmed environment. Now the difference here is that we could do anything. There are no limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Absent limits is a really, really useful term.
Absent limits.
Absent limits.
Once you get that to the deepest part of your consciousness, let it sit there and stew.
Yep, because it switches off all the programming ultimately.
No, it doesn't. Switch off the programming.
Well, that's the
just makes you aware that the programming is what limits you.
My experience of, because I've been pondering on the absent limits thing since Heather brought that forward, because she's the first one that I heard that used the term. And there's those pesky sprinkler's firing up again.
Turn off.
I've progressively been applying it to, okay, if I'm running up against a problem, I'm learning to recognizing that it's a limitation that's been set on me, and the term absent limits comes to my mind, and it helps me to process the fact that I'm trying to get past some programming, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply I'm kind of using it as a tool with which to attack.
Process.
See, the word I use, attack, to process, it's as good as any, process the situation in a fashion that is appropriate. I'm trying to be really careful with words here because every word is laced with so much programming. You have to use really neutral language. Isn't that interesting?
Absolutely.
So coming from the neutral is going to be one of the ways that we will successfully process the situations that we're in and realize the aspects that are being presented to us but actually aren't from us, that we can actually make a different decision about and have a different experience as a result of.
Absolutely.
And for, as you rightfully said, it's going to be torture for a lot of people because of the belief sets have been with them their entire lives,
mm-hmm.
and completely ingrained in what they believe, in what their reality is day to day.
Let me give a little example of changing the belief systems. On my personal level, what's gone on for me in these last 11 days, 10 days, 9 days, 5 days, is a belief system that radio was the way to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Video was the way to get it out. That soul family was the way to get it out. And that belief system for me is ultimately, I realized, is program also.
Mm-hmm.
And that program didn't come from the system of domination and control. It came from the planetary minds of other worlds that I've lived on, other Akashic record worlds that I've lived on. Some in ego, some outside of ego. But ultimately they want Earth to rejoin the symbiotic relationships of the rest of the galaxy that we all have. I've talked about the experiential wealth trade with you on many shows between solar systems,
mm-hmm.
and the experiential nature of travelers and consciousness explorers. They want Earth back in that system. And that's what interfunction with me on my belief foundational belief system is, to get as much information out into the public vibration before the Dreamtime phase took over on August 1st. And since September 16th to the 20th, the fundamental rules have changed so much that planetary sentience can work with their founding members that are here stuck in this reality on a different scale now. The thing is, even planets have ego. You get an ego at every level. What does the ego do? It's a survival tool. And if it's not a survival tool on one level, it's a creational tool on another level. In this, at this dimension, we don't really see how a planetary ego can be beneficial for us.
Well, does not an ego, I mean, there has to be some form of ego in place to actually enable you to operate as a separate thing. You can't be a separate form of consciousness without some form of awareness of self.
That's why you're in the DNA simplest, skin suit. The ego's built into it.
Yeah, there's an awareness of self that has to be present in order to function and have experiences.
And when you make your ego your amigo,
yep,
nothing stinks.
Hmm.
You don't have a giant ego because you're in union with that all parts of your body.
Yeah.
You know, there are detractors of my information, you know, ego this, ego that. Anybody that's just a source stream is going to be functioning with that type of detractors. Even on a personal level, you know, you run across those people that look at you and that identify you as this because their belief system only allows you to label you as this, this, or this.
Mm-hmm.
Ego person, this or
mm-hmm.
that, creating out of this. You've been around me long enough to know that the stream of information is seamless.
Mm.
And it doesn't stay non-seamless. It is what it is. And that's what, since the first interview that I've done with you, you've identified with. And then the different heart resonances you've had and the personal experiences that you've had. And my belief system is now changing from doing it on radio to doing it a different way,
mm-hmm.
a totally different way, a way that isn't expected by the system, isn't a part of their predictive models.
Do you want to describe that here and now, or are you going to leave that for a little later in these conversations?
It's a combination of written art, video, sound, and something wonderful, to use the words from 2001. space out of.
Something wonderful is going to happen.
Something wonderful is going to happen.
Hmm.
Speaking at people in the different layers. The first walking in energy shows that I did with you, and the ones subsequent after that, we spoke about how I spoke in layers and layers and layers, and those people that tried to transcribe those shows had such a difficult time transcribing it.
They did. It seemed to take them days and weeks beyond what it should do.
I had a professional transcribing company in Canada. I sent them 10 hours, and they were charging basically $1 a minute to translate, and they would do professional stuff at the Supreme Court level in Canada. And these were their top peak producers, and what would normally take them 6 hours or 8 hours to do a two-hour show with complete accuracy was taking them 40.
Wow. So you got a wow out of me again. I didn't think it would be that much. I thought maybe double.
40.
Wow. So that's 6 times longer. Did you say 6 hours it would normally take them?
4 to 6 hours.
Normally. 4 to 6 hours for a two-hour show? And it's taking 40.
And people, there were people that gave up the project because they simply, the material was too much for them to process and be able to regurgitate tight.
Mm.
So speaking in layers is the absolute necessity now.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be not a show, but it has to be a presentation that has all the visual formats, the touch, the scent, the taste, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It has to complete the sensual senses, not sensual. The perception, the levels of perception that we have.
Mm. See, I'm finding this. I mean, this recording, because it's a really high quality recording. I'm listening to it through headphones as we're speaking, and it's a really, really amplified experience because of the quality of the sound. It has a big effect on the delivery of the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that we've actually inadvertently kind of arrived at this point, because we're actually going to be in the same room for literally for days, and we can have these conversations for hour upon hour and build it up however you want to build it up.
And here we are.
And here we are. It seems to have just happened magically.
So we've done, what, almost 100 hours of galactic history,
mm-hmm,
since we started. We started 4 days a week, moved down to 2 days a week. There isn't anything that I haven't covered that people don't need to know already. I'm at a point where I've put out 5,000% more than I should have. Okay, is that my belief system in change now? Yes.
Well, it's, look, any process of communication, and this is straight marketing. You know, if you fix the methodology, you're guaranteeing failure. And Hope would know this, that if you want a project to succeed, goals in concrete, plans in sand. Is one of the terminologies. So what this is just simply a change in strategy, but it's not actually, you're not cutting off the radio, for instance, completely. You're not cutting off the video.
Transitioning
into a balance of methodologies, because there's a range of people listening to it. And
daily
the radio
audience that we've built up and have had tremendous relationships with, that keep the momentum of the message going. You cannot just cut them off despite something else because of one thing. You have to keep them engaged at a whole new scale now.
Yeah, and we can do that. That will continue to go. What's really happening is an expansion.
Mm-hmm.
We're focused on the radio and some video,
mm-hmm,
and now and there's been discussions about doing some written work based on the Walking in Energy.
And beyond
refined
that.
Versions, and beyond that.
And beyond that.
And it's a matter of actually bringing those other things online to balance it out, however it works in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, balancing out that with, you know, the human lives that we all have, mm-hmm, where we have to actually earn enough, you know, the mm-hmm fake Federal Reserve notes or the pretty Australian money, as it was described to me by someone in the shop the other day, to maintain. We have to maintain. That's why it's great to have folks like Hope Girl around, because she's very good at getting it real.
That's right.
Keeping it real, and, you know.
Why don't you say hi, Hope?
Hi.
She's waiting. We're actually all desperately in need of some food at this stage.
We are all desperately in need of food.
But look, it's been a great introduction to this, what is immediately looking to me like a series of interactions. And it won't just be Andrew and I. We can
everyone.
We've got other people who really need to be part of these conversations to mull over what we do next. Because,
mm-hmm,
to be honest, I'm really here to try and work out what to do next. What's the most effective things that we can do next? And you know, I'm not saying the magic bullet eludes me. Mm-hmm. There isn't one. It's a balance of things.
Be creative, be mm-hmm. happy, be heartfelt, and not let the system continue to insert new programs. Identify when you're a victim or a victimizer. Identify when you're falling into different type of archetypes. The angry person, the half-glass empty person.
Hmm.
All of those archetypes that we see in everyone else are all programs.
Hmm. Yeah, an archetype. See, an archetype, architecture. It's a program.
It's a program.
It's a program about programming.
That's right.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Once you start to look for it, you see it everywhere and everything. Hmm. In every
in its track. Just being aware of it is one thing. Stopping it is another.
To be honest, I'm finding TV. I do watch TV regularly because I want to see what the propaganda is, but I've come to the conclusion that because I'm understanding it's propaganda, all of it's propaganda, it's not propagandizing me. I'm actually separate from it. Mm-hmm. I think I've actually kind of almost reached that point. I still have some sports programming in me.
Mm-hmm.
I like watching. I've just found out I actually do still like watching yacht racing, particularly with the new yachts, because they are just beautiful. They are just beasts. But as far as political commentary, financial commentary, social commentary, all the chit chat that's going on, it's like there's a distance between me and that information now, where I'm observing it for what it is. And it's taken a while to get there, but these conversations have been pivotal in allowing me to actually get to that place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good that we're having this, because our radio audience are really important, because they have an understanding so far beyond the rest of the population. They are pivotal in taking it into the next phases.
And they are the ones that are the new leaders.
They are the new leaders. And the only way they're going to find that out is if we keep reminding them of that.
Right.
And because they only have to look around at their level of understanding. And this is not egoic. This is simply the way it is at the moment. They are in a position to do great good with the information. And I'm making a judgment here. You know, this information good, other information bad. It's just information. What reality do you want to experience?
Exactly. What
I'm trying to get back to that neutral
what
again.
What choice do you want?
What choice do you want? It's like one of those infuriating movies. I used to find them infuriating, where you know the guru would turn up and he would only ask one question. You know, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Came out in Babylon 5. You know, there was a character wandering around who was saying, you know, who do you serve? Who do you love? What do you want?
What do you want?
Now, actually, there was two characters wandering around. There was one presented as a good guy who was saying, who do you serve and who do you love? Another one wandering around saying, what do you want? Big difference in there.
Big difference.
And he was representative of the group called the Shadows, mm-hmm. who were going about managing younger races in a rather vicious fashion, because they felt that was the way to do it. Was a difference of philosophy between those guys and the Vorlons, who were presented as angelic, mm-hmm. who were wandering around trying to get people to actually...
That shows off soft disclosure.
All of it. And if you haven't seen it yet, have a look at it. Special
only
effects.
Four seasons, or five seasons.
It was five seasons, and it was a complete story in its own right. Very engaging.
Outstanding series.
Mm. There's so much information in it. It's one of those things that
and Inception should be watched by everyone.
Mm. In fact, you should probably prepare a list of stuff, soft disclosure movies that you recommend everyone catch to make sure that they've got all the good ones.
2001, A Space Odyssey is soft disclosure.
Mm-hmm. What about 2010? How did you feel about that?
Soft disclosure again.
Yep.
But it was in a soft disclosure at an attempting of a different belief system.
It had a different feel to it.
Right. It was trying to put us into a different belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, they one of the desires was to bring us back into interstellar commerce as a truck driver species.
Yeah. Yeah, functionaries.
Yeah.
And
then they can mine the best souls out of us, because the ships that they need psychics to make them work.
That was very fascinating. It was all about the psychics. Interesting, wasn't it? And the fact they talked about a big kill-off of psychics earlier in their history. Well, it sounded to me like the Inquisition,
mm-hmm.
carried out by the Jesuits.
Right.
A long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, Well, we're all here again, and
I was just going to regress one second when you're talking about still watching television and keeping up with the propaganda. When you have a response mechanism, let's say frustration, are you operating at that point on your new software and understanding, or is this a because we still have emotional responses?
I have to say it's not yet complete. It's a work in progress, because there are things that make me angry still, and they really shouldn't, because now I tell you what makes me angry is the physical suffering that all this stuff generates. That'll probably always make me angry.
Absolutely.
I know Hope's sitting over there with it.
Oh, yeah.
Frustration and hesitation are a program.
Hmm.
An actual foundational program that they created so that we would stay separate of ourselves. Hesitation is doubt in many different forms. Frustration is angst, happiness, and sadness all interjumbled together so that you can't go into yourself to find an answer to the question.
Frustration is something that pops up for me every now and then, but I've recognized there's a very large something coming past here. Yes, it's a truck. Yes, Hope was having a problem with trains a couple of shows ago. We just had a little truck problem. Frustration in of itself, I have come to recognize as a completely useless emotion that that I can, for the most part, control now, but not always. I still get frustrated at times by what I'm seeing, by the information I'm seeing. But as I learn to recognize that it is propaganda, those things, in answer to your question, Shane, those things do start to just disappear. You just don't experience them because you're just seeing it as propaganda. It's, that's what they're doing.
And that's what I mean, the frustration of recognizing, knowing that it's propaganda and being frustrated in the process or...
I think as I've come to understand the methodology by which the collective are awakening, the remedy for frustration is just patience. If you recognize that you're being prodded and that frustration is not going to assist you, you're also recognizing that if you understand what's really going on, you just simply apply, by your own decision, the emotion that you want to attach to it. And the one I'm attaching to it at the moment is just patience. So it'll just take, I've just accepted the fact, it's a belief. I've decided that my current belief is that this will happen in time, and that my generating frustration will only change my experience of it. And I'd rather be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather recognize this as simply a process. So I could make it a completely negative experience very easily. I could rampage and throw things at my TV set and break it and have to make me go and earn more crappy money to buy another one,
mm-hmm.
if I so chose.
But then you'd be stuck in the cycle.
Be stuck in the cycle, so why would you bother?
Example, after that truck went by, I got a text at the same time, and it's another person sending me their life story that they believe they have this dreamtime relationship with me.
Mm-hmm.
I won't mention the person's name. But they have this whole world created around me, this gigantic world. And if you look at it, there's probably 6,000 or 7,000 words that she sent me in 6 days.
Wow.
And this is times 20 people, times 50 people. So what are they creating about me? What's their creation about me? I'm at a conference here with well over 1,000 emails a day, and this individual person is sending me absolutely everything about their life story, how they've had dream relationships with me, and I've never met this person. I don't remember this person in the dream world.
So this is actually something, is this a program from the system sent to just drown you in contact with other consciousnesses
so
to
that they're
distract
constantly
you?
Within my field.
Okay, and this just burdens you, does it?
On a human level, it's always a burden,
mm-hmm.
but it's a blessing, too, that they're reaching out in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm actually going to read a little bit of this. I think it's important that there's a human side of me that people need to see. It's only the end of which wasn't built on solid ground in the first place. It's liberating when you no longer have to live in denial, isn't it? You've empowered me to be the world in the end and not to in the world and not of it. to heal and to love, but what about your devotion to the your own soul's thread, which is so beautiful in case you've forgotten that? Creative forces that are suppressed and destructive connect with the wholeness that is you. That is what taught me, and I am so grateful. You taught me to fear, and fear is a lie, and only love is eternal. What are you afraid of? Nurturing the part within you, the sweetness within you, give others. You deserve love and happiness, and I love you so much, and I want to share and create with you. But your choice is now's, and I'm not going to send you anything else in print, and I probably won't going to be at the conference and stop yelling at people in dream time not to talk to me. Love you wholeheartedly. It's nice to feel you so close, even though you don't want me here. I welcome you with open arms when you are ready to resolve this disunity paradox remedy between us.
Yeah, trying to suck you into some other situation to, you know, essentially expend energy, I presume.
Correct.
Is that what's going on? Yeah.
And then there's just a gigantic string of other information. I've never answered back to this person.
How many of those do you actually get, that kind of communication?
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
And it's the system. This is part of the system's response to your presence and
bogging
the information.
Bogging me down with muck.
Yeah.
And then those people that are close to me get mucked.
Yeah.
Is your discernment mechanism your memory of that dream space, or do you write them off, all of them off as...
I'm fully aware of who's communicating me within dream space.
Mm-hmm.
And if a person comes through, the vibration of that message comes through right away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I just say that I'm really happy that you shared that, because I have similar experiences with people who contact me with that kind of energy, and I pick up on it right away.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it's just really, it's helpful to hear that it's bogging you down with muck, because that's exactly what it does.
Yeah.
Not hundreds and hundreds, maybe.
Yeah, I mean the
tens and tens.
I mean the thing that disturbs me is actually that these people, to them, it's a reality.
Yeah.
They're having an experience. I don't want to actually negate the experience they're having, because to them it is real and they're expressing it. But, you know, I've become aware that around Andrew, the system is actually muddying the water continuously. It's happened to everybody that's around this particular block of information. I feel Andrew as a, you know,
lightning rod at times.
You are the Akashic in my mind. You know, you're actually starting to embody not just, that's not the word to use. You're starting to embody it like a living library of information.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's also the human Andrew. You know, there's sort of two aspects going on there, and I think you're extremely aware of that, because it's the way that you work.
That's right. But
I think others are viewing you, trying to. I think it's probably the savior program kicking in, where the savior. They're looking for someone to come and have all the answers to all
and
their
I'm
questions and resolve
can,
their lives.
And I'm doing whatever I can do to redirect the savior program being inserted into me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Well, and Heather Tucci has gone through the same thing. She did a really quite good job of walking a fine line about trying to operate in the role she'd taken on, which was essentially high in the system. She's operating at in a legal fashion without... she was completely successful at this, but she managed to avoid viewed as a complete savior, you know, the outside savior come to save me. Tough job, and she's somewhat retreated into isolation at the moment, and I suspect that's the ultimate answer to staying out of that role, is to stay out of the public light. And that's the unfortunate position that you're in, where you've got so much more information to bring out. You've still got a lot of contact with the public, and mediating that by changing methodologies is really what we're discussing in terms of changing the way the communications happen.
You know, the irony of Hope Girl being here as an MC for the Return to Atlantis event. Earlier today we were talking about the crowdsource funding that she's doing, and I just asked her, you know, what was her view on if I wanted to do something. And as we're discussing this, and I'm realizing that there's a tremendous amount of people that sharing my information are very attached to this information, and like that particular one. And then there are other ones that call forward and I know right away.
Mm.
For me, I'm at a point where this event is very big, not for me, for the world. not this one event, this day. This day and tomorrow and Sunday is when we as human beings get a chance to express our vibration at a point where the system is in barely in the green energy. It doesn't have enough energy coming in to pay for its standard upkeep of its systems. So it's going to have to go in the negative over the next few days, and then it's going to have to draw out of us. That's what that shooting in Washington, D.C. is.
Mm-hmm.
They needed energy.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a bill to pay.
Well, they've been doing staging minor events like that continuously now for a month, month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Shootings, you know, the thing in Africa, in the mall, that generated quite a lot of fear. You know, there was enough Westerners involved in that. Notice they didn't attack a marketplace. They attacked a Western mall, so the Western media would pick it up.
Right.
And it was a really obvious ploy. But yeah, you think they'll continue to stage as many of these minor incidents as possible?
Absolutely, because they have to pay, the system has to pay its bills.
Mm-hmm.
So what bill needed to be paid on 9/11? Because that was a big energy draw.
I think they were paying that one forward, actually.
Oh,
I think they were creating a bank account of energy.
They were covering up a lot of the failures of the management system in the CIA and the NSA. Because there was a lot of members of Resistance Free Earth that had gotten in there and were creating programs that were program busters, that were trying to bust the other time travel programs. So, and once they realized that the control level that Resistance Free Earth had made it into all layers of the system of domination and control, they needed to purge it, and 9/11 was a great way to purge people, assassinations, while everybody was watching 9/11 go on.
Mm.
And the 9/11 itself was just a massive timeline incursion where 6,000 different species all used timeline travel and timeline technology to create 9/11, to uncreate 9/11. And it just turned into a massive paradox. And because we live in a paradox, disunity, remedy, reality, it had to play out live on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the building melted. That's why it was all these different theories, because they all were true in some way, shape, or form. Planes did hit the building. And another scenario, the CIA did blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you could possibly think of actually happened to those twin towers.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were thousands of species using a timeline scenario to manipulate the view of what was going on.
Okay.
And ultimately, disunity had to define it as something.
It's a disjointed experience. You know, we realize that something hit the building, and we see pictures of planes. Well, maybe the planes hit the building, but there's evidence that maybe they didn't. There's so many maybes attached with it. It's because there was actually a whole bunch of different versions all playing out at the same time.
Exactly the same moment layered over each one.
Okay, yep. Well, that kind of... What that's doing is integrating the disjointed aspect of the information.
And 9/11's default disbelief is what our perception is now.
Because we can't reconcile the information.
There you go.
Yet the cognitive dissonance is such that we've decided we can't entirely reconcile. The people who are happiest about 9/11 are the ones who've actually accepted one of the versions.
Correct.
And they're going with that one version. If you try and view the information across the board like I do, I'm still at the point where a whole bunch of shit happened and there's some evidence for most of the stories, but there's no one story that explains everything that I experienced on that day. For instance, I have a memory. I'm just going to shift my chair out of the sun a bit.
Yeah, me too.
One of the bits of footage that hit the screen was as they were chopping and changing between the British coverage and the American coverage, they flipped back to a view of the building, that was a glass, where previously it looked like a plane was approaching the building, and when they flipped back to a second view, it just looked like an orb. And it was on the screen for about 5 or 6 seconds, and I was transfixed by this.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen the footage since. There was someone else in the room with me, and I pointed it out to them at the time. So what's that? I need to finish this, right? And I was in contact with him about a year ago, and I said, do you remember me pointing that out? And he doesn't remember it. Okay, which I find very interesting, because at the time we were both looking at the TV set, and I was saying, what is that? It's not a plane. You know, I recognize now it was some sort of, it was probably either a consciousness orb or a craft, an actual physical craft, but it was not a light, there were no wings, it was round,
mm-hmm.
and it was appeared to be opalescent, it didn't have well-defined edges, so it's definitely something going on there.
So what is that? That's you watching a timeline travel incursion.
Really?
That's what it is. You saw that layer of reality. Everyone that was watching 9/11, when 9/11 went down, it originally wasn't planned to be a live event like that.
What, they were going to actually do it and then kind of make stuff
erase
up about it.
And erase it. They wanted to see how people would react. But once you triggered one thing, all the good guys responded and all the bad guys responded and everybody went in all in poker.
Right.
And once you go all in, it has to become a paradox at thousands of levels. Therefore, every individual person watching it became part of that paradox and had to choose what they saw.
Yes. Fascinating.
I mean, the paradox reality.
Films like Inception are really, really useful. If you step back and observe what they're doing, they're actually, if you like, acclimatizing us to the layered nature of reality.
Correct.
And to the aspect of choice involved in each layer. And it's something, you know, we've been so programmed, absolutely programmed, to look for something that's hard and real that you bought down the shop and assembled with a drill.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to simply deciding that you wanted a new coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
And letting your psyche actually choose what it looks like and where it should be and how big it is, and simply having it appear before you because you know you can. You don't have to go down to the shop and actually buy something that someone else has grown and cut up.
How many days of TV were there for 9/11 TV coverage? 50?
Well,
how many days before the financial system opened up again?
Yeah. Everything.
What do you think was going on in the reality as the financial system was closed?
What do you think about the moving of gold? Sorry.
There was no gold.
No?
Gold was already gone a long time ago.
Mm.
Mm. Gold's used to cover DNA and human bodies that are being black marketed, transported off of Earth. They need that because of the type of dimensional travel that it uses, very poisonous to the DNA and can degrade it. And they want the DNA to be perfect, or the clone to be perfect, or the individual that's been kidnapped off this world to be perfect. Therefore, they wrap them in gold, encase them in gold, which we've talked about with you many times.
Yes, we have. It's fascinating, actually, that whole concept of what is the gold, because it's so much more. You know, again, so much more than we're publicly made aware of. So we're actually about 46 minutes into the second conversation that we weren't going to have.
Let's give it a break now.
We have to give it a break. So okay. I will close down the machine. Thank you everybody for listening, and thank you guys for participating.
Thank you.
That was a really interesting conversation. It kind of brought a whole lot of really confusing things into focus. And because for me, 9/11 was confusion. It was the definition of confusion, and remains to this day. And what Andrew's describing, that it was a series of timeline incursion overlays, actually makes sense. Doesn't help define the event down to, you know, what actually happened in the micro level, but in the macro level and the bigger view, the overview, you can look at that explanation and say, yeah, I can see why it has just been one confusing mess for, you know, 13 odd years now, almost 13 years. So whether that could ever be successfully explained to the greater community, I'm not sure, but at some point when the attention of the greater community is actually brought to bear on the realities of 9/11 and how unreal and surreal it actually was, because it was a series of attempts at incursion all at the same time, you know, I hope that would actually resolve the confusion to a degree. But people's belief sets are what they are at any given point in time. And most people are even unaware that they're living in a belief set, that they are co-creating a reality suggested to them by the system, and not something that's, you know, not a civilization that's been grown the way that we were taught. It doesn't actually work that way. So our final little piece of information for today is more of a general discussion about the galactivation event that occurred on the first evening of the conference on the Friday night. Really enjoyable event. A simple little gathering ritual just to connect everybody that was there, and in a thoroughly pleasant setting. So I'll put that on now. It runs for about 40 minutes, so it's going to take us well into the third hour, and this show can run up to 3 hours. So I thought I would squeeze this one as it's going to be a bit of an orphan, because the next show is well over 2 hours, and wouldn't be able to, in a practical sense, fit it in. So we'll play it for this one, and I hope you enjoy. Cheers.
Let's talk about those local sports teams. Go team.
Hit another home run.
How about that recent sporting event?
Exactly. How's that sporting event going?
I thought this was going to be a serious conversation.
How many home runs did they hit in the fourth quarter?
Please tell me that.
Yes, that was intentional.
Well, we're just coming back from the galactivation event on the beach at Lido Keys. And do we have visitors? Yeah. Or is it?
I didn't invite anyone here.
No.
Okay.
Is there a mic here in here?
Should I stop the recording?
Yeah, I mean, that.
No, I meant that Jenny, to be honest.
Yep, it's just Karen.
Well, this is, you know, good live radio.
I'm sure it wasn't going to be Andrew and Teresa stalking me again.
Mm. Should we stop it again?
Don't record that.
What's going on?
I'm eating.
I'm lost.
Are you sure?
Now he's not going to say anything. Hey folks, it's Chris Hales, Andrew Bartis, Hope Girl, and Shane Chapin. We've just come back from the Galactivation event on the beach at Lido Keys, which was fantastic. And we're all on a bit of a high, but very hungry. So we've been chewing salad, drinking lots of water, and
getting very parched.
Yeah, comparing notes about all of the conversations that we individually and jointly had on the beach, which was quite extraordinary, because there was how many people? About 80?
80 or 90, yeah.
Yeah, on the beach in a semicircle, facing the water in the dusk.
Mm-hmm.
Almost no wind, beautifully warm, very, very quiet for a beach.
Mm-hmm.
And a very small amount of surf noise. And addressed by Dr. Dream and Laura Eisenhower for 45 minutes. Also, a really insightful and inspiring and apt address by the both of them, frankly. Hit a whole bunch of points that really resonated with me, particularly when it came to discussing the way that we need to pull together, that we're all doing the same thing, and that the what Andrew refers to as factions, just different perspectives. And you know, we've essentially got things that we need to be working on together with. But after that, but obviously I'd like the folks around the table here to put in their comments. Well, let's just talk about the address, Dr. Dream and Laura's address to the group.
You talked about putting yourself aside and allowing yourself to be present there. That was such vital information. Don't let the sands take away the negative energy. Let the sands take away everything, so you can be present for the shared energy in the protected space. It's so vital for people to know, to have, that they can do that. People in New York City, they don't have a space that they can do it without their door locked with 5 locks on it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we had it at an open sand beach.
Mm.
90 people.
Indeed.
My personal experience was just deep relaxation and being able just to listen to everyone talk. And then afterwards, going around and meeting each and every individual person that's there to meet me or to meet you or to meet Hope Girl, and having the beginning of those communications. And, you know, you run into a few people that really want a tremendous amount of your attention, and you just have to go from person to person to person and not be rude about it. You know, I'm a human being, too. And, you know, when people put you on a pedestal, sometimes they don't realize how high they put you on a pedestal and how much attention they want. But doing what I do, you just deal with it. You just let it flow, because it was a tremendous amount of love in that circle.
Hmm.
And then afterwards, meeting everyone, tremendous amount of love, and it greatly regenerated and recharged me. What I needed in my life.
Yes, well, we'll be talking about that in a bit more detail over the next few days.
That's right.
And you'll understand, I'm speaking to the audience here, understand more about why Andrew needs to be recharged, why Andrew needs that support at the moment. And it actually isn't just Andrew there, it's going on for a lot of people who are working at very high levels are being, shall we say, affected at this point in time. But, Hope, how did you find the actual...
Well, it was an incredible experience. I, too, was very relaxed. I felt incredibly peaceful. The surroundings were so beautiful. I could feel the energy from the sand itself. And especially when they did some of the energetics with the singing bowls and bringing in some senses of smells from the incense and the oil. What really struck me was when Dr. Dream was talking about how even if you think you just showed up here for some other reason,
right,
you're here for a purpose. Every one of you is here, and it's not by mistake. You're here for a purpose. And that really connected to me, and to just sit there and see all of the people around and to be able to feel the energy and the intentions, because I could feel their intentions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized tonight on a personal level is just that those lines of separation are just, they're not really existing anymore, and people are just falling into each other when it comes to the work that we're all doing to get together to try to change the planet. I mean, basically, the coincidences are just, they're speeding up. You know, I met a whole bunch of people that we started having conversations, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I was just talking about this 2 days ago. So the synchronicities are there. The connections
Cherokee
are happening.
Nation?
Yep, Cherokee Nation.
Share that with them.
Oh, so yeah, after spending a week with an Aboriginal or original shaman and another lawman from the tribes in Australia, I do have some Cherokee blood. And the moment I got back, I called my mother immediately and I said, it is time, we have to go find our Cherokee tribe and introduce ourselves, because we've kind of been disconnected through 3 or 4 generations. And so I just knew that it was time, and I was going to end up getting out there and somehow meeting Cherokee tribe and connecting with them. And so tonight on the beach in the dark, these two beautiful women walked up to me and we struck up a conversation, and they had, oh, we know your work and we're friends on Facebook, and we're so happy to meet you, and we really want you to come visit us on your tour in Asheville, North Carolina, because we're right next to the Cherokee Nation, and we're doing all this work for the Cherokee spirits and ancestors there to help release a lot of the ancestors that have been stuck in the land, especially the murdered children.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, my heart just started to, like, I really felt it. And I was like, oh, here we go. I knew it was time to meet the Cherokee people, because my Cherokee blood has been really acting up, especially since I spent time with the indigenous people in Australia and also the Maori as well. So, so that was like, I'm just not surprised by it anymore. I used to be blown away, but it's just happening over and over and over again. It's just the way, it's the new way of being. This is the new paradigm. That's what I'm feeling. So
it's interesting. Yeah, look, we tend to view things like that, at least I did anyway, before I realised what was going on there, that the events like that galactivation are somehow connecting us to something out there. And of course they are, in a sense, but the more immediate effect is just connecting all the people who've attended, because they're all there in that spot at that time for a reason. Why wouldn't it be that they're connecting, that they're there to actually find out about one another and what it is that they could do together? Because I had 3 or 4 incidents. 2 of them were relating to intentional communities.
and you know, Blake and Teal Scott, for instance, have decided to literally hold I suppose you would call it, they're going to do some sort of tour as well. They're going to focus on you know, the aspects of intentional communities.
Mm.
She's adding it to your normal Teal workshops.
Yeah, and
heavy intentional Teal workshop, community development.
Yep. And there were two other people who essentially have come to me and said, you know, I was part of, because they've heard that we'd started a show on communities. And, you know, one was part of a community that John Denver was influential in beginning back in the 70s, and it's still there, and she still has a property there, and she'd like to reactivate the community. So, you know, I can pass that information on to the group of people I'm working with, and we can put it out on the show and maybe reactivate something that appeared to have gone into oblivion a long time ago.
And I'm making noise. I'm sorry.
That's okay. This is just, we're just recording something that's happening, you know, at a particular point in time. The fridge door's opening, cigarette paper's being rustled, so it's all good.
We're human beings recording.
Exactly. So the connections people are making are part of that activation. So I think you just got activated, Doc. Or the Cherokee part of you did.
Actually, yeah, the Cherokee part of me got activated in Australia.
Yeah, and just got another little boost tonight.
And just to put it in my own simple words, because, I mean, I have a lot of facts that I need to still learn and research, but I can just speak from my heart and tell you that, you know, Indigenous peoples have been holding the knowledge, and they've been guarding the knowledge and the secrets of the earth, the wisdom of the earth, throughout all of this, throughout all of the systems that have been enslaving us, and the government and everything else. They've been holding this, passing it down through generations, and there's something really special and powerful. Because now is the time that we need to remember all of that stuff as a people on this planet, and nobody remembers except for them. So they really are all connected, and that's what I really realized when I was in Australia. Here I am on the other side of the planet speaking to Indigenous people, and they all know each other. They're like, oh, you're Cherokee? And I was one of them because I had some Cherokee blood, and it was... But then they were adopting people into the tribe. You know, Maori were adopting people. The originals were adopting people in, just bringing them into this culture of holding the knowledge. And that was the experience that I had. So it really doesn't matter what Indigenous tribe it is, it would seem. They seem to all be, there's like a network, a spiritual network, that there's just this understanding. So my Cherokee blood woke up in Australia when I was with those Indigenous people, because it's all the same. It feels like it's a similar energy stream.
Well, I also had other people speaking on other issues, which was completely unexpected, which I don't plan on going into here because it's too long and complicated, but that'll come up.
Shane, what were your impressions of the galactivation?
Peace. Yeah, it was really interesting to see I think one of my favorite parts is when Dr. Dream, as Hope said, even if you came here without a role, or you came here not thinking that you play a role, the reason, or you just simply being here means that you do play some kind of role.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely important for me to hear. At about 30 minutes in, my ears started ringing, and it actually happened 4 times, and it was the longest my ears have rung ever. I actually got a little freaked out about that. I've never experienced that.
You had something to say about ringing ears a couple of shows ago.
High vibration entities communicating. Your ears are tuning to that vibration so you can be more aware of their presence.
Huh. Was there a difference between tones in the left ear to the right ear?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is in my left ear. This is actually left back, almost left center.
Mm-hmm. When you get that, it means it's activating a particular part of your brain to determine if the awareness you is fully there, And when you have the ear ringing, it's to remind you you have to be there for the presence to have communication. And it'll start this chain reaction of electrical impulses that'll go all over your brain, so the left and the right brain begin to fire in a proper sequence, and then you can actually have a full multidimensional communication. So it's a process. Other than the other, I don't think it was an attack in any way, shape, or form. But
I felt fantastic.
Scalar weapons will do similar things. They'll just, instead of going after the ears, they'll go right to the brain to trigger a reversing pattern. So you can't have multidimensional communication. For you, it was clear you were getting activated for high vibration communication. There's a tremendous amount of high energy spirits that are protecting. Tremendous, thousands and thousands of them.
Mm. Do you perceive them directly at all?
I experience them.
Mm-hmm.
So I know they're there, and I know they're there in mass, and they're not there to be seen.
Mm.
They're there to just hold space and to not interrupt with anybody's experience of the collectivation. They're there to hold space for safety and security of those minds that may be worried about safety and security.
Mm.
So that layer of architecture is removed during that time of that ceremony.
I just realized that my tinnitus was off during that whole period of time, and it's back on now.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Getting weird, folks.
That's right. It's just beginning.
Probably, yeah, more than that. I mean, we look at all these things
at
some
point. Weirdness meter.
You know, weird as shit-o-meter.
Yeah, exactly. Weirdness shit-o-meter.
11 out of 11 out of 10.
Exactly.
Ah, dear. So then the ceremony was essentially some aromatherapy, some audio therapy, some music therapy with singing bowls. And
powder is good.
And the powder. There was a powder that was very nice. Very
you called it Perundi.
Perundi, mm. Yeah. Very unusual, slightly pungent, but really pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Smell.
Intoxicating.
Mm.
After I rubbed it on my hand, I just put it on my face like this.
Mm.
Really
mm.
nice.
Mm. Yeah, I would like to have had a whole lot more. We only
yeah.
got a small amount each. If you feel like you wanted to bury your face in it.
And they mentioned that it's no longer available in the U.S. I'd be interested to find out if they're selling it in Australia. Or where you can actually
where you can get it.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, they got it from somewhere.
Of
they
course.
Had some.
Mm.
So they will probably be able to do it.
Chinese herb shops. Good way to look.
Mm-hmm.
They have
that
everything
makes sense.
From elephant penis to deer horn.
Whatever.
Sure, that elephant penis smells great.
Put it in the tea, so dried put in the tea.
In a white wine sauce?
Yeah, the white wine sauce.
Nice Chianti.
Yeah.
Don't mention Clarice. Okay, so but the interesting thing was that the ceremony ended at as dusk was really falling away tonight, and the rest of the time on the beach was literally spent in that not quite dark space. I don't know whether you guys noticed, but there was a lot of and I couldn't tell whether it was they were actually fluorescing, but there was a lot of light coming off the sand, despite
mm-hmm.
the fact there was not a lot of light falling on it. It just
yeah.
seemed to be a bit unequal, and there was actually quite a lot around once your eyes
mm-hmm.
were accustomed to it, and people were simply, it was just like a normal gathering, and they were just forming in groups, and people were swapping and walking around and introducing themselves and saying hello, and I'm still having the experience of people coming up to me and saying, you know, you've been in my head for a year or however longer, I feel like I know you, and
mm-hmm.
thank you very much. And
not liquid voice.
Liquid voice, apparently. And look, all I can say to them, because I do find it a little embarrassing, but I'm getting used to it. And it is the things that they're saying to me are that they really appreciate the questions that I end up asking,
mm-hmm.
and the lines of communication, and the fact that I don't get particularly, can stay neutral about it, I think is what they're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
That they really appreciate that. It helps them to actually work through the information. I get that a lot of stuff in emails like that as well. So for folks listening to this, yeah, I do absolutely appreciate those comments, because it means that the stuff that I'm doing is actually effective. I hate to think that I'm putting all this time in and the messages aren't getting through, but they are, and it's great.
It's very effective, and I have to say that I've been getting similar things as well, where people that I don't know they know me, they know the work that I've been doing, and they come up with the most beautiful compliments about how they read the first blog and they've been following all this time, and for each one of them, and for anybody listening to this as well, the way I feel about that is that's so important to me to hear that, because of that effectiveness that you're talking about, Chris.
Yeah.
Because basically, when you put yourself out on the line like this and you sacrifice everything you used to have in your life,
mm-hmm.
because this is the reason why you're here, and it's really hard work sometimes. I mean, there are great days, but there are days when I work myself to the bone.
Me too.
You know?
Mm.
And so when people come up and they say these things, and there's that recognition of the effectiveness of the work, and you see and you feel the energy of the person and how something that you said or did actually affected them and helped them to embrace who they are and go out there and do something effective in the world, you see that chain reaction, and those are the moments when I realize that it's definitely all worth it, and it keeps me going. It's like fuel in the car.
You've made that comment a couple of times that people have followed you from that first blog. That first blog was pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved the title, While You Were Sleeping. And what inspired you to use that particular phrase? Because it really catches your attention.
Actually, that's what inspired me, is I wanted something that caught everybody's attention,
mm-hmm.
you know, while you were sleeping. I tried some other titles that were kind of dull. I don't remember what they were at this point, but just, you know, kind of a factual title, like, this is what's really going on in the world today, or something along those lines. But it needed to be something that really grabbed people's attention, because that's exactly, because as I was going through my awakening experience and I was learning about all these agendas and everything else, to see, because that's how I felt. I felt like I was asleep,
mm-hmm.
and I woke up, and when I was sleeping, all these things happened, and I missed. Because I was in La La Land, and I figured that's, you know, where a lot of people feel. It's like, whoa, this
yeah.
has been going on in this world war and that world war. I mean, it goes back that far. So basically, so really I just wanted a catchy title, but it was also connected to the way that I personally felt when I went through.
Look, it's a great description, because, you know, while we were sleeping, a lot of shit happened.
And
it really, really did.
Oh yeah, a lot of shit happened.
Yep. And now we are, some are awake, some are semi-awake, some are still asleep.
Sounds like a good title for a movie. While you're sleeping, a whole bunch of shit happens.
Yeah.
Part
yeah,
that'll be the movie that's based on the blog.
That's the Hope Girl magic.
A whole bunch of shit happens while you were asleep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Call it like it is.
Yeah. No, it was really good too. I didn't actually manage to catch up with everybody that I wanted to, and partly because it was dark, but it was kind of, it was the random,
intimate.
the randomness of it was interesting, because there was, at every turn I was having a really interesting conversation with people who were really switched on, who, you know, are here for a reason, and you know, some of the conversations were just, okay, what we just talked about, they were just talking about the work that we've been doing. But some of them were directly on things that are coming, things that you know, need to be dealt with, and it's pretty exciting stuff. The whole mixture of things. And had we been there for another 2 hours, it would have been just more and more of the same. But I think everyone was getting a little tired and
parched,
dry,
dry, yeah,
dry. Yeah, despite all the moisture in the air, you still get dry because you sweat. But very, very pleasant atmosphere, and a really, really nice way to start off. And actually, a nice kind of soft way to start off a conference. There's no rah-rah, there was no,
mm-hmm.
you know,
no, just a good way to start.
I was going
to
say, there's no corporate bullshit, because
mm-hmm.
that's what you get a lot of the times when you go to a conference, especially if it's corporate sponsored, the first thing you get is the big sell. You know?
That's right.
Oh my God.
Buy our product now.
Yep. Well, we got all we're selling around here is freedom, folks.
Right.
We actually can't sell it. You can't buy it.
But you can buy my book that tells you how to get your freedom.
I didn't see anyone selling books. No one set up a stall. There was not a stall in sight. Didn't need to be. Did not need to be. I must find out that beautiful singing bowl that Dr. Dream's assistant was playing. The copper one.
Oh, that one was nice, yes.
Mm.
I really want to get my hands on that and play it, because it's...
absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. I didn't notice whether he was also playing a crystal bowl or not.
I didn't notice either.
I only thought I saw
the gong was really nice.
The gong was great.
Yeah, he knows how to play that thing really
so
nice.
He certainly does. Wow, it was some real kind of, you know, Captain America stuff going on with that gong.
Exactly.
You're the one with the shield?
Yep.
Yep. There was some shield of steel stuff going with that gong. Well, I got my Marvel character correct, at least. It was the right one. I could have said Wonder Woman.
Captain Australia.
Captain Australia, yes. Captain, there was a Captain Kangaroo at some point.
Yes,
I watched him.
Captain Kangaroo, yeah. Don't know if I've ever had that.
I watched him.
Hmm.
Watched him growing up.
So did I.
Yeah, I actually don't remember Captain Kangaroo. I'm not sure whether I ever watched it, but there you go.
You're not missing anything.
Mm, apparently not.
Though you do have to watch at least one episode of Fraggle Rock.
Of what rock?
Fraggle Rock.
Fraggle Rock.
Fraggle Rock. Down at Fraggle Rock.
Okay.
Yep.
You get 30 minutes of your life that you won't lose. Honestly, it's not that terrible.
But if I shoot myself at the end of it, what's the point?
You can make commentary on it
okay.
for the rest of your life.
Is it that bad?
No, it's good.
Oh, that's good. Okay. All right.
Depending
well,
on what episodes we give them.
If it's on the internet somewhere, I should be able to track
yep.
that down. But I have a feeling those conversations are going to continue over the entire weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I met an engineer with some very interesting technology who's building a very special boat, which is, I'm not sure I mentioned it to either of you two guys. It's an HHO system, hydrogen system. But he's
I have listened to part of that conversation.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's routing it through a fuel cell. And then running an electric engine rather than just creating hydrogen and running an internal combustion engine, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's more technology, and I suppose there's always more to break down if you build something like that. But I have an inherent confidence in electric engines because the parts are all under a lot less stress and they last a long time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with introducing electric car for the automotive industry, if you did it under current conditions and tried to, you know, let's assume that the system is still running along, but there's a whole lot of electric injected. There's no maintenance on the damn things.
True.
You know, every now and then in their lifetime, and they're going to last 20 years, good engine, you might have to grease the bearings maybe. There's no grease and oil change, and nothing breaks.
Mm.
There are electric engines that are 100 years old running lifts in New York,
mm.
doing just fine, thank you very much. So, yeah. But he did speak of another boat, which is a French design, which I've seen a bit of stuff about on the internet, which is a full-on internal combustion engine, and it looked like to me it was doing about 40 knots. So,
wow!
And they're actually real-time pulling hydrogen out of seawater. So they're pulling hydrogen out of seawater real-time. So it's literally got an intake, a seawater intake, pulling water in, which is being hydrolyzed into hydrogen. That's my understanding of it. Which means you can drive that boat forever, until some seaweed clogs up the intake, then it'll stop. But otherwise, we'll do it forever. Mm. So, Andrew, was there anything that came out of the conversations you had that you wanted to talk about while we were recording?
The amount of people that were there to see all of us, I think it's going to play out more and more and more as the conference goes on. People that, the doctor, some of the other people, I think this configuration of people hasn't come together in many millions of years.
Really?
And so much that it hasn't come together that we're just re-meeting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Just figuring out people's energies, just in that beginning stage and state that...
So this was just the introduction?
Just the introduction.
From your perspective?
Just the first introduction.
I would agree with that assessment. Yeah, because all of the conversations sort of were ended with, I'll talk to you tomorrow or over the rest of the weekend, and we'll see where that goes.
Okay. Hold on. Try these. They're way better pictures. They don't burn. They'll give you that dry mouth.
Mm. Mm. But I particularly like Dr. Dream's description of the fact that...
Laura's speech was really, really good, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Really
absolutely.
Good. She was really got into the heart of it, why you're here, how to let go, how to understand that things come at you, and in unity consciousness, you have to forgive, compassion, and love,
Because if you don't, you're not in any consciousness. And that's similar to what I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spent a lot of time with Laura when off air and when we met privately and for dinner, and she came over when I was in Los Angeles. We talked for like almost 9 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Her and Dr. Dream too.
That wasn't recorded though, was it?
No. You couldn't have understood the conversation between me and Laura.
Really?
It was at that highest level.
Wow.
Yeah. And the few people that were there listening to it just were like, just literally, the speed at which we were speaking and the comprehension level at which we were speaking is...
I mean, Laura does pack a lot of information into a very short period
right.
of time.
And it was just both of us at that highest...
Yeah. In fact, I haven't heard Laura speak for a while. I listened to a lot of her early stuff, and I found she had a really interesting characteristic, and probably because she's a very, very... she's obviously a female and very attached to the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And because I like information dense stuff, you know, it's one of the reasons it's good to work with your stuff, Andrew, because that's what it is. It's dense information. And her information is very dense, but I found it frustrating in the beginning because she tends to describe, or she tended when she was in her early days of radio, to describe a really interesting situation and then spend a lot of time talking about how she felt about it rather than explaining it further, which me being me found that rather frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
But she seems to have found a balance with everything, because I thought tonight's piece by her was really excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really worked well with what the doctor himself was saying.
Mm-hmm.
which was excellent. And I liked his description of what's come together are the parts of the jigsaw puzzle. They're here at this time and in this place for a reason.
Yeah.
And it's time to pull this jigsaw puzzle together.
That's exactly what I was
which
telling
is,
him
which,
and
yeah.
Los Angeles.
Yep, and you know, the things that have happened to you in the last week, did you want to talk about any of those now?
A little bit later. I need to make some private phone calls,
sure.
Maintain friendships.
Yep.
Vital for me at this point. It should be about a half hour, and then maybe a little longer. If not, we can talk about that tomorrow, because I want to get Monica in on that too.
That would be excellent, actually, to have them both here. Have you both
if
here.
You want to talk about what Monica said to you.
Well, I don't remember Monica's surname, but Monica
Caraba.
Caraba.
Mm-hmm.
She was it San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
Was present when when the attacks being mounted on Andrew were first there, and she walked up to me whilst I was talking with others in the I suppose you call it the hotel dining area, call it a bar,
yeah,
dining area
bar.
And to say hello, you know, so we exchanged hellos and et cetera, et cetera. And she's been following along some of the shows for quite a while, so
mm-hmm.
and was, so she was aware of all the work. But she started to tell me that she was in San Francisco, that you were in San Francisco with her when that whole thing started, and she was in tears, still distressed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still getting a reaction to that. But she actually had what she described as a bewildering experience, a real-time experience of just how these situations evolve, which we'll talk about later when you're feeling better about it. But she's still trying to process the information, process the experience, and get some perspective on it, put the pieces together to try and work out what happened, because it happened so fast and because the things that were happening were very unusual to her.
Mm-hmm.
They were things she'd never experienced before.
And
yet she
got timeline attacks, like trying to erase me from the timeline.
Yeah.
How do you describe that unless you witness it?
Mm. Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that later. In fact,
and Misty Hill is here also.
Who was also, was she present or on Skype?
She was on Skype.
On Skype.
And then,
how many other people were involved in the conversation?
Amy was there, Jamie was there, Melissa was there, Jen Archibald was there.
And these people who were were there members of different groups in that room with you?
ES and KS, yes.
ES and KS groups?
Different factions that don't normally ever speak together came together. And
yeah, because they recognize your value to us and wanted to make sure that you
they
you
recognize
compromised.
More than that, the value to breaking the factions between the two groups.
Yeah,
and
well...
The two groups share the same
okay.
information.
Maybe this incident happened for a reason, Andrew, because it seems to have...
Everything happens for a reason.
Multiple reasons, actually.
multiple reasons. Great lessons learned by all.
Somebody's got to start as a peacemaker. If that's me getting attacked, unfortunately, it's what I have to roll with. And eventually it was going to come. Eventually it was going to come. I was just an endurance battle. It had been going on for so long.
Mm. So Monica's part of it was...
And Missy Hill's battlefield clear.
Well, she's probably not been affected by it.
Oh, yeah.
But we like Monica.
Missy and Jamie, but they both got taken out, too. They couldn't... Next day, they were incapable of doing anything. They were in bed.
Really? Just feeling that bad?
They got attacked back. They got targeted back because they...
Okay.
There were several dozen different groups.
Let's not talk... We'll get into that discussion, which we'll talk about later. We don't want to get you...
I just want to enjoy tonight.
Yeah, just enjoy. Just enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was hoping Shane would come back in. Shane's gone out. I just wanted to
have a cigarette.
To ask him a question. So I'll swing back to Hope. Now she's smiling at me saying...
Where did we want to swing to?
So, tomorrow we have an interesting job. We have to host the live stream.
I am so excited about tomorrow.
Yeah, and we were intending on doing some homework and researching the people we're supposed to be talking about, but probably for very good reasons, it didn't actually transpire. We haven't really done that. And what we'll do is pull speakers aside one at a time, because we know the sequence they're speaking in. Excuse the door in the background here, we've got a creaky hinge. But I realise that we'll have every opportunity to actually talk to each individual for a few minutes and find out what it is they want to be put out about them.
I think that trying to do some homework, because I've, over the last at least month, maybe 2 months, I've just been learning that the universe doesn't want things to flow that way, to have plans and then homework and have something laid out in a certain way, because it's more effective. At this point in time, to just basically jump into the energy stream and be in the moment of now.
Well, time and time again, we go into a show with an outline,
yeah,
and it works out, encompasses sometimes most of the outline, sometimes parts of the outline, but it's always better than anything we could have put down as an outline, because it just, the conversation unfolds, and as you say, you follow the energies along, and they do what they will. And I think that's what's generating the kind of flow of events that this conference is, as an example. It's a great example of a flow of events. People came up to me tonight. One gentleman came up to me tonight and said, I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew I was going to be here, and I had all these hassles, and I'm sleeping in the car.
Thank you. I spoke to the same gentleman, and...
He had
a story. We won't say his name for this, but he had such a beautiful story about his own awakening experience, where he comes from, and he just got in his car. He didn't know how he was going to get here, but he got here.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. But what really stuck out to me was the energy behind him and what he was saying. It was just so incredible, and I met like four or five other people with stories not as dramatic, but the same energy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Somebody, they said that they moved. They said, that's it, I'm not doing my old life anymore. And they packed up everything and they moved like last week, and they said, we had to be here. I didn't know how, but we were going to be here.
Yeah.
So more and more people are doing that. They're abandoning their older ways of living and the old systems, little by little.
Yeah.
They're abandoning.
They are indeed. And the impression, the word I've used to describe how they're feeling about it is irrelevant. They feel the old system is irrelevant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
And so they're kind of moving on, as it were. So I'm going to put this on pause here because I see Shane is about, and I wanted to ask him a question. So we'll come back on in a moment.
Well, that moment didn't come. We stopped the recording at that point. And in fact, I'm not even sure that Shane got to ask that particular question at that, or I got to ask that particular question of Shane at that particular time. But those are the sorts of conversations that we had, and I ended up not recording as many as I wanted to, for the reasons that will become obvious if you listen to last week's repurposing show, to where there's a description of what the presentation, Andrew's presentation, was at the end of that particular conference. His was the second last presentation. He had intended to, or he told us that he'd intended to just give a presentation on working together, you know, the negative aspect of factions, you know, the need for leaders. And about 20 minutes before the presentation, because we'd been talking all weekend, as I said, one of the earlier conversations, I'd said, I think I'm here to work out what to do next. Hope and I had been discussing the idea of a big crowdsourcing campaign for some time, and we were discussing it more and more and more over the weekend, and I had asked Andrew, could you actually make a reference to this as the last paragraph of your, or, you know, somewhere in the last concluding comments of your presentation? Which he said he would, but 20 minutes before the presentation, he turned around and said, right, we're doing a presentation on your proposal, and let's reset the room and away we go. And we had to move a few things around, but to make the microphones, etc., work. But essentially, we proceeded to put out there to the universe, to that room, to the live stream, what we thought we needed to do to find abundance and to actually co-create abundance in order to shift the collective out of the old system into the new, under their own steam entirely. No outside influences needed or required, wanted. And that's described in detail on the repurposing show from earlier this week. And again, on the long conversation. And again, on the Earlier Galactic History show. And we'll be talking about it again this week because things have moved forward. We're starting to put a structure in place. We're starting to form our final kind of communication ideas to get it going. And things are amping up. A fuse was lit in that particular moment. And we fully intend to actually get that underway. The entire alternative community is lacking in resources. And we have the answer in and of ourselves to actually address that and make it work, make this transition work for all of us. I didn't get to record conversations with a number of people on the day, but I will certainly be following up on a number of things. The next show is going to be a show about Andrew, the attack on Andrew, and we'll be pulling in. I've got over a 2-hour recording of him talking about that, but we do want to actually get the perspective of the people who are assisting him. So some of the names he mentioned will be on that panel when we do that particular recording. And the most impressive thing about it is the way that people rallied around it, around the situation, around him, to support him, to make sure he wasn't actually, you know, taken out of the picture. Because if you have this conference minus that presentation that he facilitated, it changes the energy of the whole event. So, and obviously the system knew that and didn't want it to happen, but it did. So all I can say is very impressive flow of events. A couple of things about that last the comments in that last piece. Time to pull the jigsaw puzzle together. That is a key thing. We've spent years now learning what the system is, how it works, where it is, how we interact with it, roughly what it's done. We know we're playing a role. We know we're playing a game out here, but there's still a personal element to it, because we're still physical beings, and the system affects us physically, directly, and daily. So there's this really unusual situation where you can see it from two perspectives at once, from that higher level and from the day-to-day level. And that comes out clearly in talking to Andrew. You know, his perspectives are fairly extreme, but it's the same for him. And it's the same for everybody. It's the same for Lisa Renee. It's the same for Teal. You know, they're speaking from a very high level, but they still have partners. They still have lives. And that's how it is on this planet, in this reality, at this moment of now. So I haven't yet viewed an episode of Fraggle Rock. It's not particularly high on my list of things to do, but I may run across it at some stage. And I'll let you know if I form enough enthusiasm to comment on it, I will. But I'll just leave you with a couple of weird things. We talked about things as weird on the weird as shitometer, and a couple of things did come up that were quite weird. First of all, there was some jewelry that Teal Scott was selling, based on her vibrational paintings. Really beautiful stuff, really nicely made. And there was a number of pieces sold. You know, I'm not sure how many, but you know, probably 10 or a dozen. These are pendants with a sort of a large central medallion with one of the pictures on it of various designs. And that I'm aware of, no less than 3 of them vanished within 24 hours, gone, just nowhere to be seen, couldn't find them. Very strange. Not sure why. There was an incident when I drove Andrew back to the airport. The GPS, I'd already driven Hope back to the airport. It's quite a long trip, so over an hour, and the GPS was functioning beautifully for when I took Hope up, then when I took Andrew up the following day. About 45, 50 minutes into the trip on the I-275 freeway, all of a sudden the GPS directs us off into a corporate area off to the right-hand side of the freeway for no reason that I could see. And it directed us in and out of the buildings for about 5 minutes, back out the other side, straight back onto the I-75. And I sort of said to Andrew, this is completely weird. What is happening here? And he said, well, it's happened before when he was touring with Larry. The GPS used to take them wandering off to places just inexplicably from time to time. His view is that the consciousness thread that we actually created attending the conference at this particular time in this particular place is powerfully connected to each individual that attended, and as they return home, it's like they've got they're pulling this strand of consciousness wherever they go, and it's exposing the people and the landscape, whatever, to the new thread of consciousness wherever they go. He said he considers it a form of pollination, and that because the two of us were in this car and driving past, someone somewhere decided to play with the GPS and make sure that we passed through this specific area. I'll probably never know why, but it was actually quite fascinating. I'm trying to read my handwriting here. There was a third one, which I can't even read. So obviously I wasn't meant to read it out. But there were some strange things happened, and in case you didn't hear the long conversation yesterday, the strangest one was this. This is where synchronicities actually abounded. For some time, Hope's been trying to find a high-level financial person to help her. And she'd lamented this a number of times and had even lamented about it during the conference about, you know, how she really needed help because it's very overwhelming. She's taking on a huge role, incredibly well. And, you know, it was time to, because the role was certainly going to expand when this new project starts, so it became necessary. Just before the new community show earlier in the week, I was setting up for the show at this particular point in time. We had about half an hour to go. There was an insoluble technical problem going on with the file. I knew that we wouldn't be able to actually get the file to work. So I was thinking about where we could take the discussion to fill in the time, make sure that we utilized all the time and got the messages out. I was asked to whip around to the Lido Keys Holiday Inn Hotel and pick someone up because I'm obviously the only one here with a car. So I knew I had time. It's only a few minutes around the corner. Jumped in the car, went around the corner, pulled up. Very windy day. And there was a lady sitting on the front steps by the driveway with a bag, and I recognized her as one of the people attending the conference that I'd been introduced to. I said, hi. What I actually said to her was, hi, you're Yvonne, and I've come to pick you up for your reading. And all she heard in the wind was, I've come to pick you up. So she said, oh, fine. And we grabbed her bags, and I shoved them in the car and jumped in the car and went back. We walked in, and everybody looked at us walking into the yard and said, Chris, that's not Yvonne. That's Tammy. What are you doing? So, you know, I was the subject of howls of derisive laughter, as they say, for my apparent poor communication. So I said, really? And it turned out that this lady had actually messed up her interpretation of her itinerary, thought that the connecting flight was her first flight, and never made the flight because she was completely, you know, she was hours and hours after the flight left. So she'd just been finishing resetting her itinerary, and she was sitting there wondering how she was going to find a place to stay, what to do next. I turned up, threw her in the car, and took her around to the house that we were staying in. So she sat down, and everybody thought it was hilarious, and you know, basically the conversation resumed. I went back and picked up the real Yvonne, and on the way back in the car, she started telling me about her connection to an intentional community that I was aware of, and of a strange spiritual problem that the land had that required cleansing before it could be used, and that she, her own property, she wanted to start some sort of intentional community on it sometime. So I arrived back at my place with the perfect person to fill in the gap that I had in the show, only to be greeted by more laughter and saying that Hope had finally found her financial consultant to help her, because Tammy was an Uber banking analyst from New York, you know, not that far from Boston, where Hope Girl lives, and had exactly the experience and qualification that Hope Girl needed. So it was hilarious. There was me basically kidnapping this girl, bringing her around to a place unexpectedly. Well, I didn't really kidnap her, but I just kind of, you know, scooped her up. Solving two problems instead of one. And it's a great example of the sorts of synchronicities that were going on all weekend. That was a particularly funny one, but that's what happened. And there are others. Hope's acquired a second consultant in the last couple of hours, even just today, someone who's actually been working on one of the other shows with me, on the Walking Energy show. She's, you know, she actually lives 10 minutes from Hope. So Hope's been intending trying to manifest some folks. Well, there you go. She's now 2 for 2. So we've had a pretty wild time from that perspective. It's been really amazing and really enjoyed it. And there's certainly at least one more show to go where we'll be talking about what happened with Andrew, etc. It's a really, really, really interesting story, compelling story. So we'll begin that process next week. Andrew's going to be at Shasta for at least a week. Had a lot of healing to do. He was pretty beaten up, as you could tell by the level of his tension in the last show. And we all hope that he actually, you know, gets what he needs up there. There's a possibility I'll get up there. I've got a slight opening in the schedule before the Opal tour starts in California, and I've got to investigate the timing and the practicality, but may be able to get up there. Hope and Shane doing the same. So I'll be able to connect with those guys again, hopefully before I head back to Australia. But at the moment, it's late afternoon here at Lido Keys. I'm seriously considering hitting the beach a second time. I had only my second swim for the trip today, and it was absolutely lovely. Salty water, very warm, beautiful sunshine. Not enough surf for me, but that's okay. I got into some salt water, so it was terrific. That's all we have for you today. I hope you enjoyed all that. Point your friends and colleagues at it. I think there's a lot of really, really good information in there about all sorts of things. Everything from 9/11 to system programming to whatever. And had a really interesting time with... There are a few conversations we had that I recorded that can't be put to air for some time, just because they're quite sensitive, that will eventually reach your guys' ears. That's sometime down the track. So it was a really significant meeting. And I really hope that there's a return to Lemuria conference in a few months' time, and that we have another one here in Lido Keys next year. It certainly is a pretty amazing place energetically. Thanks very much for being with me today. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll look forward to your company on Walking in Energy, which will be on Sunday in the US, Monday Australia, then on the Repurposing Show, again Sunday in US, Monday in Australia, and then the Flow of Show through the week at this stage will follow as per usual, or as closely as possible as I can get to it, because I will be on the move at various times. I hope you enjoyed today. I had quite a nice relaxing couple of hours re-listening to all that. And I actually, a lot of the time when I do those conversations, I don't remember the details, particularly if there's a really strong flow. I don't remember the content. It was really interesting for me to actually sit and just listen to what kind of flow there was in those group conversations. Very interesting for me as well. So thank you for joining me. We'll see you next week. Peace.